Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. I'm just rearranging my notebooks here. This is, I think, the first day I've actually been relaxed. We've had such an incredible week. Our audience is exploding right now. I mean, things are happening that are just fabulous. So, you folks that are sharing, keep sharing. It's great. Those that aren't sharing, please help us out. We only need, I think, 10 million listeners before we can really have an effect on the national debate. Actually, 1 million, but I still want 10. So Canada is exploding right now with new listeners. We've got folks in Australia as we work with Jen Clark in the Australian Bill of Individual Rights, really distinguishing it from the UN, Human Rights Declaration, which, of course, human rights mean UN rights, mean the rights of all humans to what you have, because, well, after all, we're all human, right? So they just want a better life, so people in Madagascar can have what you have in Kansas, because they're human, and you're human too, so therefore you're equal, right? No. No. There's a big difference in jurisdiction between a Bill of Rights for citizens and human rights that people should be free from, in all countries, like, torture, exploitation, slavery, discrimination, all those things like that. Those are basic, I would call those human rights, but the UN's the last place that's going to enforce them, because they don't. Because the UN, everything they have is to increase the power of the UN. So the only reason they talk about human rights is to put every human under their control. We know that, the whole point of government is to control people. So you have the least amount of government necessary for the least amount of control necessary for the most freedom. That's how it works. That's what liberty is. We have the concept of, and people have a really sharp idea in their brain, and I didn't for a long time either, the difference between freedom and liberty. Freedom is what you do. Liberty is what society has available to do. What the country has available. So in other words, liberty is much more how much we can all express our liberty as opposed to how much you can express your individual freedom. And so there are different levels of individual freedom. I'm going to sneeze. Let me mute myself here for a second. I'll be right back. Okay, sorry about that. I don't know what else to do, actually. Usually I just anyway. Sometimes I'm not lucky enough to catch it ahead of time to find my mute button. But, so think about that. So the title of the show today, The Only Global Pandemic is Globalist Government Power. And that goes to COVID, first and foremost. COVID was a virus whether at this point it really, well, as Hillary would say, what difference at this point does it make? Well, I'll tell you, it makes a difference because the people that are guilty should be prosecuted. Dr. Fascist, Xi Jinping, Wuhan lab, North Carolina lab, Moderna, Pfizer, all the people that engage in criminal activity to make billions of dollars in personal profits, by developing a vaccine, then creating a virus that matched it, and then releasing it on the rest of the world. Yeah, but the point is that the virus itself, for 99.95% of people, was no big deal. You had, at worst, moderate symptoms. I believe when I had COVID, before we even knew what COVID was, back in, last week of December, first week of January, December 2019, January 2020, and I've got the recordings to prove it because I sounded like crap on the show. It's really pretty funny, actually. It's asking for co-hosts, and that's when we had, the guest hour. I still might do that. I might do that again. We haven't done that for a while, where I take our reporters and say, okay, you get the whole hour. You host it. I'll just sit back and listen, and I'll punch buttons. It's really kind of fun. Anyway, I did that out of necessity because I couldn't talk. And that's what happened with me with COVID. I mean, it affected the thing that I need most for this radio show, my voice. And so that's the one thing I lost. I didn't lose taste, didn't lose smell. I mean, I could live with that. No, I lost my voice, which is like torture for somebody in radio because it's not like we can sign, the show or do like visuals. And so it was fascinating. I mean, I couldn't sleep hardly. I had to sleep sitting up. If I laid down, I started coughing uncontrollably. It went on for about 2 or 3 weeks and it was gone. It was a problem. It wasn't like flu bug throwing up and all the other bodily functions that go along with it. No, it was fairly mild. It was just like a really strong cold, but there's no fever. And I just couldn't talk, and my voice was gone. It was a cough. It was the dry cough that never ended. That was the worst part of it, was the cough. It's like your body's trying to shake it off, but because it's new and different, didn't know how. Well, of course, once I got over it, I was fine, until my Omicold, which I got in a hospital doing a routine check. And so then I picked up an Omicold, and that was the next time I was sick. And that was 2 years later, you know. And so I think I had one more cold after that a few months ago, something pretty mild. But each one of these gets milder and milder, you know. So is it possible to get reinfected? Well, I think now, yes, with all these different variants, I guess you can, kind of like the next cold bug that comes around. But can you, you know, is it going to be worse each time? No. And I've never had a vaccine, and I never intend to, because I don't want to get sick from the vaccine. Because the vaccine has COVID and HIV and graphene oxide and iron particles and horrible, nasty things that are proving to be quite deadly, you know, especially you look at all the people who have had it. It's amazing the people that have had COVID shots and boosters, you know, in the Brandon insurrection that are all getting COVID. I don't believe it. I think that's because they want to be like us. So we get it too. So we're one of you. You know, it's like this group identity thing that, it affects us as well. I don't believe they've had the COVID shots. I think they only reserve those for the peasants. So the peasants take the COVID shot, and the leaders don't, because the leaders know that they're better off on hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, all the things they've banned for us. And that's all part of the global pandemic of power. That's the only pandemic we have. It's a global pandemic of power. I mean, I proved over again that COVID ended, you know, mid-July 2020. I got the CDC chart to prove it. So that's no big deal. So why are we still having problems with COVID? Well, because it's government power. You know, you've heard it. You all know what it is. The Great Reset, you know, the World Economic Forum, the Davos Group, George Soros, you know, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. You know the players, you know, big tech, you know, big pharma. We've talked about this a long time. But it really is a problem of this whole, the only pandemic, and I wish people would start talking about it this way, that the real pandemic is government power. And how do you cure government power? What medicines do you take to remove the virus of government power? Well, you got to get rid of these people. You know, you've got to get them out of office. You've got to unelect them. You've got to, if they're bureaucrats, you need executives that'll fire them. We talked about that yesterday. With Joshua Whitehouse. Great name for a person in politics, by the way, Whitehouse. I love that. I'm sure he's being teased endlessly. I only mentioned it in the introduction. I didn't really go into that. But the point being that, his job was to clean house in the Pentagon and get rid of the dead weight and the Obama holdovers and the radical peacenik leftist diversity crowd that is more interested in skin color than defending the nation. Well, and if you're interested in skin color, that's fine, but the Defense Department is not the place for you. We don't care about skin color. We care about defending our nation. You know, so it's a very different thing. But the big things that are coming up now, we've got the globalists in our own country that are trying to steal our energy, steal our carbon dioxide, steal our health, steal our supplies of stuff, steal our independence, steal our economy, steal our homes and cars through climate change, you know, basically steal everything and turn us into Venezuela with them in charge. And that's what they want. And then they can go to their globalist masters and kiss the ring of Soros and the folks at the UN and say, look what look what we did. We destroyed the United States for you. Aren't we wonderful? I mean, that's really what this comes down to, right? So the global pandemic is government power. And so you got this WHO treaty. Now I've been kind of looking into this. I didn't think a lot of it at first, and I still think we can easily resist this. Because, although the Senate has to ratify any treaties, and this is definitely a treaty, I've got an article that says, well, it's just amending a treaty, so it doesn't need Senate approval. Well, if it needs Senate approval for a treaty, wouldn't an amendment also need Senate approval? Because now it's a new treaty? Okay, that's the line I'm going to argue. We'll talk to Jonathan about this. I've got the first hour and the third hour. I don't know if Jonathan's going to stay beyond the second hour. We'll see. He's a busy guy, so if he's fortunate to do that. So this is a really great time to call in. If you've never called the show, I've got time to talk today. So 215-383-3832. It seems like, and we've also got the live chat. So if you want to go on live chat, I'll be checking it a lot more frequently than usual. So at the bottom of your broadcast page, you will see the live chat. Just kind of type something in. And again, you can type in from anywhere in the world. We have a Skype line, but you really have to call in like the day ahead. And so if you want to talk tomorrow, then best to call today, because I have to check and approve your account. And if we had a Russian sales, spam person, trying to call, no, you didn't get approved. I'm sorry. It ain't going to happen. So don't do that. And to the person that put all those comments on writeyourlaws.com, the spam comments, they've all been deleted. So just don't even do that either. Just leave me alone. Just give me good comments. All right. So I've got a bunch of articles, and I want to get into them. But you look at the basic problems. CO2. CO2 is responsible for our food and our energy because it's carbon and oxygen. Carbon dioxide is what feeds the plants. You know, without the plants, we die. Without the plants, we don't have oxygen. So if the world government wanted to depopulate, as they say, the best way to do that is to steal our carbon dioxide and convince you that there's some, you know, mythical climate change, and that what we really have to do is, you know, get rid of the one thing that makes plant life, you know, possible on Earth, carbon dioxide. The other thing that makes it, or one of the things that makes it possible, the other thing is sunlight. Sunlight, you know, H2O and CO2 make C6H12O6 eventually, you know, which is, sugar, glucose. You know, plants make sugar too. You know, why do you think tree sap is tasty? Why do you think we make maple syrup from tree sap? Because it's full of sugar. Okay. But high school biology, folks. this isn't that tough to take a look. But you look at the world government, the UN, our supplicant, you know, globalists that, wish to be, up there at the UN, like Barack Obama, I think would love to run the UN because he'd have even more power. And the thing is, you know, and this works for our Australian Bill of Rights, where we have a very clear provision that the Australian government can make all the international treaties and agreements they want. They aren't binding on the citizens. And I think we need something in our Bill of Rights, too, to that effect, that the United States government can engage in all kinds of Paris climate change accords and international treaties and all that kind of stuff. And that's binding on the U.S. government, but it's not binding on the people. Okay, we don't have to obey anything because our Bill of Rights and our Constitution is supreme to any international agreements that the federal government makes. That's very clear. This is why I'm not as worried about the WHO treaty. What I'm more worried about is the fact that people don't know we don't have to comply. It's just like you don't have to comply with Roe v. Wade. No state in this country ever had to comply with Roe v. Wade. Why? Because the Supreme Court doesn't have the authority to make policy. It's just that simple. They certainly don't have the ability to rule on matters of health and medicine, because health and medicine are state priorities. The federal government has nothing in the Constitution that delegates them any power over health and medicine. So all these things, the CDC, the NIH, the FDA, technically can't exist constitutionally. All right? Well, I say the FDA, that would be the exception, if they were run right, because food and drugs are commerce. And I would say that the federal government does have a role through the through Interstate Commerce Clause in the Constitution to regulate the commerce. And since food and drugs are a huge part of commerce, to the extent that they're part of commerce, they have a right to regulate that. But in terms of forcing you to take a snake oil jab or put on a mask, or the ability to even suggest that your state should lock down your small businesses while keeping your big corporate donors like, Amazon and Walmart, open? No, they can't do that. They can't even make the suggestion, or to close down the cruise lines, or to tell landlords that they can't evict people during the crisis that they created by engineering a vaccine and then a virus to go along with it. No, they can't do any of that stuff. So the biggest problem is that people are uneducated about their ability to resist, about their ability to not comply. And so the states really need to stand up. And this is what Pianik was talking about yesterday with Josh Whitehouse. The states need to stand up and say, we're not going to comply. I mean, I can't believe that no state stood up to the Supreme Court and said, you have no jurisdiction over abortion. First of all, it can't be a right because it involves three people. And, rights only involve individuals. Rights don't involve governments either. There's no such thing as states' rights. States have powers. Federal government has powers. Governments don't have rights. And they can't have rights. Why? Because they're not people. Only people can have rights. Okay, because governments aren't created by God. People are. It's very simple. So governments don't have a birthright. And you can't have rights without God, without a higher power than government, without a birthright, that you own your own rights as part of your humanity, as the fact that you are born, part of being born, you get arms, legs, various body parts, things like that, but you also get rights. Okay, so your rights are as integral to you as your spine and your nervous system and your heart and your lungs and your brain. And so that's a component. So if you think of the human being, I never thought about this before. I just kind of went up on this particular tangent. But if you think of a human being, a total human being is a complete package, created in the image of God, has certain unalienable rights from your creator. Well, if they from your creator, if the rights are as integral to you as your heart, lungs, brain, male and female body parts, legs, arms, and everything else, then how can government separate you from your rights? They can't, except by force and misinformation. Which leads me to my next point. I think we need to keep the disinformation board. I really do. I think conservatives need it. I think independents, patriots need it. I think America First needs a disinformation board to cancel the left. This is a great opportunity. The fact that they can't do it right doesn't mean we can't. Oh, but Greg, don't do two wrongs don't make a right. No, but as one of the commentators, an article I read said, two wrongs don't make a right, but they do make a deterrent. So if we use the disinformation board, to give all the leftist disinformation, We could use it to close down the government schools as a threat to national security. Bianchi raised that point yesterday. Government schools are a threat to national security. Why? Because they're making everybody stupid. They're indoctrinating our entire young population with leftist, BS. That's a threat to national security. And by extension, the teachers' unions are too. So in the interest of national security, the Disinformation Board should recommend that the entire government education system be abolished. And we go to a full choice voucher system, where any educational tax goes to vouchers to all citizens, all adults, to disperse as they see fit. Parents can spend it on the schools that they want their kids to go to. And that could be anything, everything from ballet class, flying lessons, something I'd approve of, advance to the philosophy club, or to, if they want to give money to a government school, well, maybe get rid of the government schools, but private schools, all kinds of educational opportunities. I mean, that's choice. And of course, then the question is, why are you giving, education money to people that, that don't have kids? Well, because they're taxed. That's why, and if they're taxed and they don't have any ability to say where that money goes, then that's taxation, not representation. We fought a revolution over that. Anyway, so all this stuff ties in. So the biggest threat right now that we have is a global government that wants to starve us of carbon dioxide and thereby starving us of food and energy, the two things that make life work. Well, there's more than that, but the major component. Try getting along without food and energy. Energy drives the economy and food drives your body. Okay? So it's really going to be tough to get along without food and energy. All right? And CO2 is responsible for both of those things. Carbon, well, actually hydrogen too. So let's put hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen. That's what creates your sugars, C6H12O6, glucose, okay? Carbon dioxide, plant food. Carbon and hydrogen, hydrocarbons, that's oil, okay? So hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen, those basic elements, are essential for human life and the human economy and the perpetuation, there we go, of human beings and of all life on the planet is dependent on carbon dioxide. So the idea that these wackos, oh, sorry, that probably totally blew the microphone. The idea that these wackos have come out with this ridiculously stupid theory that carbon dioxide is a pollutant. Well, is air a pollutant? Oh, water, is that a pollutant too? I'm not talking about the stuff in it. I'm talking about the actual air and actual water, because that's what they're talking about. Let me get into an article I found that's absolutely fascinating. And I love this stuff. I had an extra hour of research today because as we move to a 7 o'clock show central, so that's 8, I'll have to rephrase my ending. So the show's now going to start, except for, we haven't quite worked out Friday, so tomorrow might be at 6 o'clock again. But as far as next week goes, if I can arrange it, all the shows are going to start at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Mountain, and 5 o'clock Pacific. So especially for all our listeners in Arizona, which are many, this would be a good time. Let me see, do I need that article? Let's see if I need that one. Hang on. This would be good to readjust, you're listening because we're going to have time for you. It's going to be great. All right. I think that one's, this is the article I want. That's the one. So I don't need that one. I try to close as many windows as possible because that way my computer actually works, which is a good thing. All right. There's the Who, there's Spygate, there's more Who stuff. The Who. All right. Check this out. Well, actually, before I get into it, let me play a couple things real quickly. Take a short break, as it were. And we've got to Jonathan joining us in the second hour, and the third hour is probably back to me, but he may stay. We don't quite know yet. We'll find out. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half-liter water bottle or a 16-ounce glass. to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strikeforce energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeforceEnergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. So I just got a text that it's hard to listen to the show live, and obviously you folks who are listening now are able to listen to the show live, so that's a good thing. But just in case, it's really simple, and you can pass this on to your friends. Just go to blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. That's our website, and that's the one at the top of your page. And the top show is always going to be either the one most recently podcast or the one that is being aired live, or it's going to be the one that's going to air next. So if I do the show the night before, a couple of days before, things like that, or like 20 minutes ahead of time, you know, when I create the show, that's the next show is going to be listed. And when that show goes live, it's still going to be the top show. When that show is podcast, it's still going to be the top show until I create the next show. And so the best way to do is to listen to the show live. Click on the thinker, where you got a big white triangle, or the top left corner. I find clicking on the thinker more useful because I never tried it on the live show because I'm doing the live show. But that might help folks out. To do that. Any questions, you know, call me, send me something on live chat, and I'll be able to do that if you have a friend who's having trouble. Obviously, you who are listening now are doing just fine. All right, so I found something from April 3rd of 2021, and so this is last year, but the problems were still the same last year as they were this year. Anything after January 20th, 2021 has been a complete disaster because we've had a coup. All right, so this is from the website. I'm trying to find the website here. NWO. I'm not sure what NWO is, but here it is. Climate change scam, fraudulent President Biden, U.S. News. Isn't that great? Fraudulent President Biden. They actually say it right here. Biden's war on CO2, starving planet Earth. this is such a great article. I found it, you know, looking around for other sources, and this article kept popping up in other places by Brian C. Joondep, and that's J-O-O-N-D-E-P-H, Joondep, Joondep, June. We got to get him on the show. You can find a byline for this guy. Doesn't say, but this is such a great article. I posted on my Facebook page for the public. It's on the Action Radio Environmental Action Project page. And so we have about 20 groups. That's one of them. So he starts off, carbon dioxide is persona non grata in leftist circles. Listening to Democrat blathering over CO2, which they exhale copiously with each breath, one would think this gas is poisonous, on par with sarin or other nerve gases. In reality, CO2 is plant food. Let me say that again. CO2 is plant food, an essential for life on planet Earth. Okay, so when they take away CO2, they're taking away your life. They're trying to kill you. And why else would you take away CO2? Because it's such an essential thing. Everybody knows this. I mean, this is basic high school, maybe even junior high earth science. CO2, one carbon atom, two oxygen atoms. CO2, what's hard to understand about that? Plants breathe it in. CO2 plus H2O equals C6H12O6. You know, we can do the balance equation. I used to do that in high school and college. We balance equations. Okay, so trust me, the atoms work out. carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen in various numbers, you know, form carbon dioxide, form water, you know, H2O, and form glucose, sugar, C6H12O6. And that's it. That's the building blocks of life. I mean, the energy and those same chemicals, hydrogen and carbon, form hydrocarbons, you know, which create oil, petroleum. You know, carbohydrates, which is oxygen added, create sugars and starches. You know, so it's fascinating that oil and sugar are pretty closely related. And the fact is, it's fascinating. They both provide energy. I mean, I didn't think of that until just now. But when you think about it, the only difference between hydrocarbons and sugar is oxygen. Well, oxygen burns. Oxygen has oxidation. That's burning. So hydrocarbons don't burn until, I guess, they get combined with oxygen. And then they burn, and then they release the energy, and they break into CO2, H2O, you know, some nitrogen, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, sulfur dioxide. Actually, the carbon monoxide until they cool. Then another oxygen atom kind of, you know, joins and it makes it more stable. Carbon monoxide is not a stable atom. It either is nitrogen monoxide or sulfur monoxide. You know, they come out of the tailpipe and they come out as ions. And they quickly take another oxygen atom, and that's when they make it stable. And then if they take on water, you know, you get H2SO4 or H2NO4, sulfuric acid and nitric acid. And that's what they thought of as acid rain. But because we've reduced the amounts of nitrogen and sulfur coming out the tailpipes of cars by such an extreme amount, which is a good thing, you don't hear about acid rain anymore. Surprise, surprise. See? Technology works. Yeah. So the answer to environmentalism is not wackos, it's technology. Back to the article. CO2 is plant food and essential for life on planet Earth. One of the fraudulent President Biden's first executive orders. I love how he says fraudulent President Biden. That's actually part of the title now. I just make it simpler. Biden coup. You know, Biden insurrection. But he says fraudulent President Biden's first executive orders signed on January 20th. Gee, that we should call that installation day. Okay, because that's when Biden was installed in the White House. So January 20th, installation day, aims to, back to the article, restore science to tackle the climate crisis. Joe claims. More laughter. The policy of my administration to listen to the science. Really? The author says that. Really? I love it. His fraudulent administration can't decide how many masks we should wear, how far apart we should stand next to each other, or why, despite millions of Americans getting vaccinated every day, we need to consider more lockdowns. Most of these recommendations did not, quote, listen to the science, unquote, and now the arbitrary changes, you know, are still not following any science, particularly evidence-based clinical trials, the holy grail for Drs. Fauci, Birx, and the rest of the medical smart set, or as I would say, Dr. Fascist, you know, Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard, you know, of the health Nazis. That's how I'd put it. Anyway, the article says, in the executive order, Brandon, my word, emphasizes the social cost of carbon, whatever that means. Is there a social cost of air and water, too? Is the word social a convenient excuse to invoke social justice, systematic racism, oppression, intersectionality? I don't even know what that is yet. I'll have to look that up. Intersectionality. Is that where you cross the road? No, maybe not. Privilege and other leftist dog whistle buzzwords in the grand plan of fundamentally transforming America. That's a good question. That's where I got that when I said earlier, you know, about the cost of air and water. This is where I got it from. Okay, I always give credit where it's due. So is there a social cost to air and water? you know, do we have to pay for the air and the water beyond what they already, you know, no, because they've already been provided for us. Thank God. Appreciate the help. You know, it's nice to have air, water, land, you know, all those kind of things. It really makes a, you know, thing you need to everything we need to live an incredible life here on earth. Here, I mean, this is the Garden of Eden. Okay, we just have to treat it like one. But the idea that you should get rid of carbon dioxide, what, going to get rid of oxygen next? No, why don't we get rid of blood? There's so much blood out there. You know, people have too much blood in their body. Why don't we just remove it? And it's that stupid when you think about it. Removing air, we going to take our lungs too. I guess we need some, well, we're going to have a lung reduction program so we breathe less air. I mean, this stuff sounds insane, but so does everything else coming out of the left, which is why the best thing we could do is decertify the Democrat Party, not vote for them, and reduce them to basically a quivering bunch of sniveling little whiny babies, which is basically what they are. Okay, back to the article. Carbon happens to be the building block of life on Earth. It is also organic, produced by natural processes that cannot be reproduced by man in any meaningful way, specifically the creation of coal, oil, and natural gas. Carbon is non-GMO, genetically modified organism, free-range, pesticide-free, and everything else needed for it to be sold at Whole Foods if it was edible. I love that line so much, I'm going to read it again. Carbon is non-GMO, free-range, pesticide-free, and everything else needed for it to be sold at Whole Foods if it was edible. This is why I love this article. You can see why, right? Okay. Back to the article. Carbon dioxide is one of several greenhouse gases and certainly not the most prevalent, as that distinction belongs to water vapor. Should there be a ban on water? And, of course, you all know how water vapor is expressed in the atmosphere. Yeah, it's called clouds. Yeah. So if you want to see a greenhouse gas, look up. The white stuff, that's greenhouse. You know, that's reflecting. This is why a cloudy night will retain more heat, you know, the next morning than a clear night. So all you folks in Wisconsin, when you get those clear winter nights and it's like 40 below the next day, that's because you didn't have cloud cover. You didn't have the natural blanket. You didn't have the insulation of all that wonderful water vapor. So it'd only maybe be zero when you woke up instead of 40 below. See, that's the difference. So global warming is actually a good thing. Oh boy, that's heresy, isn't it? You know, and so your strongest, you know, try that with carbon dioxide, you know, try saying that, you know, if you try any scientific study that says carbon dioxide, you know, the lack of it, you know, overhead, you know, has cooled the planet or an increase in carbon dioxide over any particular place has increased the temperature. It doesn't work that way. The way it really works is that the Earth warms up and the warming of the Earth is what creates carbon dioxide, not the other way around. Carbon dioxide does not create the warming of the Earth. The warming of the Earth creates carbon dioxide. So the warming of the Earth is actually a good thing, which you'll see later in the article. So there's no need to paraphrase and describe. I can simply read it to you in all its wonderful articulate greatness. Back to the article. See, carbon and CO2 are not the same thing, but interrelated. CO2 feeds plants, which ultimately become fossil fuels over long periods of time. And when those fuels are used, CO2 returns to the atmosphere to feed more plants, the circle of life. I want you to think about that for a second, because this is really fascinating, that actually oil is a greenhouse, is a green product. Oil is green. It is. Oil is environmentally sound. You know, like I say, it comes without pollutants. You know, it's GMO, pesticide-free. There aren't they put additives in, but I mean, you know, oil is a natural product of the earth. It's pure. It's wonderful. It's outside, as that little teeny bopper says in that ad for that organic milk product. I forgot what it is. It's just a screaming kid going, "It's outside!" It cracks me up every time. All right, but the point of this is that the carbon dioxide is natural. Oil is natural. These are natural products of the earth. They are made in the earth. Oil is made in the earth by combining hydrogen, carbon, temperature, and pressure. That's what makes oil. Not your T-Rex, you know, not your ancient tulip. Those aren't making oil, okay? The earth makes it itself. All right, it's called abiotic. Look it up. We did a whole show on it. Just scroll back. You'll find it. Anyway, here it is. Carbon and CO2 are not the same thing, but interrelated. CO2 feeds plants, which ultimately become fossil fuels over long periods of time. And when those fuels are used, CO2 returns to the atmosphere to feed more plants. So think about that for a second, okay? Yes, there are some fuels that come from, you know, plants and organic material over time, you know, crushed and mixed up in temperature and pressure and all that, okay? But the CO2 that's in the air goes into the plants. The plants, you know, crushed over millions of years, become oil, becomes gasoline. The gasoline, when it's burned, releases the CO2 back into the air. So burning oil is actually recycling. Uh-oh. All the environmentalists just dropped their jaw. you know, and you can tell them that too. Well, the burning of oil, the burning of fossil fuels is actually recycling, because we're recycling carbon. We're recycling carbon dioxide. We're putting it back in the air for the plants to breathe. So if you're burning carbon, if you're burning, you know, oil, petroleum, natural, well, you're burning oil, you're burning gasoline, you're burning any petroleum products, you know, coal, natural gas, you're actually recycling. You're recycling the carbon dioxide. You're recycling carbon, putting it back in the air so the plants can breathe it. So by burning fossil fuels, you're actually helping plants instead of the opposite. So it's not a pollutant. It's actually an aid. Now, I think that's fascinating. I think that is absolutely fascinating that we're able to help that way. I'm going to check something here. My headset just made a weird noise. Yep, we're on. Everything should be fine. All right, I'm going to keep going because I'm on a roll here. I hate to think I lost this, but you know, I never know with the circus here when things disappear. Okay, carbon dioxide. Yeah, I already read that. CO2 is a relatively small percentage of the atmosphere, 0.04% to be exact, a fraction of a percent of the air around us. CO2 levels can vary significantly from less than 400 parts per million outdoors to over 1,000 parts inside a crowded room. Crews of submarines can handle CO2 levels up to 8,000 parts per million without adverse health effects. Okay, let me say that again. CO2 is a relatively small percentage of the atmosphere, 0.4%. Okay, so that's less than 1%. Okay, 0.04. In fact, it's less than 0.5%. So you tell me how a gas that is less than 0.5% of the atmosphere can block any heat at all. Okay, and I use the colander example. If you had a colander, right, you got a colander, you're making spaghetti, you know, you boil your water and you toss in your spaghetti, and you want to get the water out and you want to keep your spaghetti. And you're using a colander with 0.04% coverage. You know, so your colander has enough straining to cover, you know, less than 0.5% of the area that you're going to pour your spaghetti into. How much spaghetti are you going to keep? What, one strand, maybe two, by luck? Not a whole lot. You're going to pour your spaghetti down the drain. And that's exactly what happens to heat. It goes into the atmosphere. Because 0.04% of any gas is not enough to stop much of anything. Okay, cover that one. Here's the other thing, too. From less than 400 parts per million. Okay, so Gregory Wrightstone, friend of the show here. Got to have him on again. Talks about 150 parts per million is death. All right? We get down to 150 parts per million of carbon dioxide, plants die. And we die, too. And there's no recovery from that. So the fact that we're in places less than 400 parts per million is dangerous. We are at dangerously low levels of carbon dioxide. We need more carbon dioxide. So this is proof that the WHO and the world government and the UN and the Brandon insurrection and the leftist wackos and all these folks, the proof that they're trying to kill us is that we're already ridiculously low in carbon dioxide and they want to get rid of what little we have. And they want to starve us. They think they're going to be okay. They think there'll be just enough food left for them and the rest of us, you know, to hell with us. I think that goes against my theory that they need a whole bunch of folks around on the planet to work for them and to buy their products. Now, I'm not so sure. I think I may have to rethink this because they may have a lower idea. They're still stuck in the 1970s population bomb, the limits to growth. You know, we're all going to die of overpopulation. You know, what we're really going to die of is lack of carbon dioxide. You know, so we need more of it. But there's a great argument for your leftist friends that say, look, I burn fossil fuels to release carbon back into the atmosphere so plants can breathe it. It's part of the circle of life. Oh, I should get Chansey here. Oh, yeah, Chansey and Cindy might call in at any time, which would be great. And so then we would be able to hear them, which would be kind of cool. Reporting, there's a big event going on. There's a huge dinner. And a day-long project, which costs way too much money for me, unfortunately. I'll be at the rally tomorrow night, but that's what's going on, and it's going to be fascinating to see what's. Oh, got messages. Okay, we'll get that later. Looks like Pianki's on the line too, so let me pick up Pianki, our virtual. I should say co-host. So hey, co-host, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Greg.
Good morning.
You know, that's a good point you put out there. Some mind or some intelligence is trying to kill all life on Earth, humans.
Well, why else would they do it? There's no reason. I mean, carbon dioxide is carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen are the basic building blocks of life, both plant life, animal life. They're in our atmosphere. They're in our land. You know, like I say, hydrocarbons make oil. Carbohydrates make sugar. You know, I find here's the thought that I had today is that sugar creates energy and so does oil. And the difference between them really is just oxygen. When you think about it, carbohydrates versus hydrocarbons. Hydrocarbons don't have oxygen.
Well, when you think about it,
yeah.
When you think about all these different attempts from abortion to vaccines, gunshots,
mm-hmm.
to the removal and the prevention of utilizing carbon-based fuels in order to produce what produces life in plants and also with human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So some intelligence is trying to kill off human beings.
Yeah, and this is what we have to stop. This is why we have to get the information out. This is why we have to, you know, this is why the show needs 10 million listeners so we can have some impact on the public debate. You know, I mean, I just picked that figure, but we really need that. Because in the revelation from this article, that by burning, quote, fossil fuels, you're actually releasing carbon dioxide, you know, from millions of years ago back into the air so that plants can breathe it. That's the ultimate recycling program. So burning fossil fuels is actually good for the environment because it releases carbon dioxide that plants can breathe and create more food for us, which can keep us going so that we can recycle. Carbon, the carbon cycle is a well-known cycle, which is, has an added component to it that I certainly didn't think of until now, until the author pointed it out to me. You know, but the fact that two things: one, that sugar and oil are both energy, and they're almost the same chemical structure, molecular structure, and that the carbon cycle, the burning of quote fossil fuels, the term I almost never use anymore, is actually good because it releases carbon dioxide. We're releasing carbon back into the carbon cycle. It's actually essential. So when you think about it, here's a question for you too. You know, if you believe in intelligent design, that the world's not an accident, that there is an intelligence, there is God sort of, you know, putting all this together for us, it makes sense that oil would be created to release carbon back into the atmosphere so that plants can use it. That would be the perfect recycling program. It takes care of itself. I mean, why else would we have oil?
Oil is produced at the, you know, oil is naturally produced at the mantle, the Earth's mantle anyway.
Well, we talked about that. Yeah, we did a whole show on that. Yeah. See, I don't know how much is fossil fuel, quote, and how much is produced naturally in the earth. It's probably about like 95 to 5. I would say 95% of the oil is naturally produced by temperature, pressure, hydrogen, and carbon in the mantle.
Because if the earth was at a circumference that allowed plants to grow, now I think, what is it, about 25,000 miles from the surface down to the center. So at what
point
in time?
Well, the mantle's below the crust.
Earth,
You've got the crust, you've got the mantle, and you've got the core. I don't know how much is produced in the core of the Earth. It may be too hot. The temperatures and pressures may be too hot and too
high.
That's
what I'm saying.
At that point. Yeah. Okay.
How could plant life exist that close to the core? Of course, it wouldn't even be a core then, because core, the heat is generated because of the external pressure around it that's causing the heat up.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know what the mantle looks like because volcanoes reveal the lava.
Yeah.
So we know where the mantle is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the sulfur. So if sulfur's down there, that's sulfur that gets. We know sulfur's in the oil because there's sweet crude and there's like sulfur tainted, you know, smelly crude. You know, so there's different varieties of crude. The lower the sulfur, the better the oil. We just happen to have very low sulfur oil in the United States compared to the higher sulfur oil in the Middle East. We got better oil than this.
And it spews up. It spews up all the time naturally at the ocean bottoms.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me continue on here.
And then the bubbles come up out of the ocean and into the air.
Yeah. But what if we had a bumper sticker that said, I'm creating plant food. I'm burning fossil fuels. I'm burning carbon. I'm releasing carbon dioxide. You know, I'm helping the planet. So who are the real greenies? The real greenies are the people that are driving the biggest vehicles, driving the trucks, releasing the most carbon dioxide back into the atmosphere so the plants can breathe. So trucks are environmental.
You're absolutely right. Now, what's the other side of the question? Who is it that's pushing this Green Deal thing, and why are they doing it? Yeah. And the only reason that they could be doing it is for profitability and control.
Well, how do you profit off the death of millions of human beings? How do you profit off taking carbon dioxide out of our world? And the only way they're doing this is by propaganda. You know, I've got the carbon. Where did I get to the carbon plant? You know, let me pull it up now. This is hysterical, and it's not. I mean, it's on my Facebook page. Strategic vision: the role of fossil energy and carbon management in achieving net zero greenhouse gas emissions. This is from the Department of Energy. There's a new organization. Have you ever heard of this? the Office of Fossil Energy and Carbon Management, the FECM. You ever heard of them?
No, it needs to be dissolved. I'll tell you that right now.
I haven't heard of them either until yesterday. I'm doing research for this stuff. You know what I mean? I'm just poking around, and I just start asking questions online. So the secret to investigation, it's not that I'm that brilliant an investigator. I'm not. But I ask questions. And because I ask questions that are different, these amazing things pop up. And it's kind of funny that the Department of Energy, you know, the Office of the FECM, what's that, the Fossil Energy Carbon Management Division of the Department of Energy? Yeah, they need to be done away with. See, that's something that I would take to Josh Whitehouse, who was on the show yesterday, especially with his connections, because he served in the Trump administration. He'd be able to get that to people who might be environmental. You know, this is why it's so important to have the connections in this show to people that are going to make a difference later on. And so, you know, this is part of why I do what I do, why I like to have these guests on, that A, I love their knowledge and I love their experience, because it's the best way to find out, you know, what really happens. But secondly, them and the people they know will be able to take the things, the revelations that we have here on the show, the bills we have on the show, and widely distribute them. And that's going to be huge. Do you enjoy
it? And you know, you
have
to be doing this.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It could be one or two people, one or two entities.
Mm-hmm.
From the range of human being, or the other A is aliens who took on the shape of humans. Why would they want the planet? What does the planet have mostly that others don't? Well, two things. One is water, and the other is an atmosphere which has nitrogen and oxygen and plus some other gases.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question. Why would, if you were creating the world, if you were part of the intelligent design, why would you make the atmosphere 72% nitrogen?
Well, what does nitrogen do naturally? Doesn't it suppress fires?
Well, no. I was thinking of nitrogen fertilizer. Nitrogen
is
actually a fertilizer
for
plants,
food.
Too. It's used for a lot of things. If freezing it, you know, you can use frozen nitrogen can really cool things down. I think nitrogen is plant food because every plant has, you know, nitrogen nodules. It actually has nitrogen fertilizer, which is made petroleum based now, unfortunately. But let's look it up. This is where I need a producer. Anybody want to be a producer for the show? You know, come talk to me. Let's go nitrogen. Nitrogen. Let's put a general search here. Let's find out.
Well, they use it to produce ammonia, fertilizer through that Haber-Bosch process, which uses natural gas, really.
Hmm. Oh, here's Britannica. Let's see what
Bosch spark plugs. You remember them?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were nitrogen what? Well, like
no,
cables, guitar cables, I think are nitrogen sprayed so there's no oxygen so they don't rust. So nitrogen prevents oxidization, which is rust. Here we go. Nitrogen, N, non-metallic element of group 15, VA of the periodic table. It is a colorless, odorless, tasteless gas that is most plentiful element in Earth's atmosphere and is a constituent of all living matter. Ooh, this is getting interesting. Hang on. I think I'm onto something here. Atomic number 7. For those who don't know the atomic number, that's the number of neutrons and protons, you know, balancing with electrons. So the atomic weight is 14.0067. It's pretty simple stuff, all right? It melts, it boils, it does everything. About 4/5 of the atmosphere is nitrogen, which was isolated and recognized as a specific substance during the early investigations of the air. Carl Wilhelm Scheele, a Swedish chemist. So I do my German accent. Yeah, Carl Wilhelm Scheele, a Swedish chemist, showed in 1772 that air is a mixture of two gases, one which is called fire air, that would be oxygen, and the other foul air. Because it was left after the fire. So, yeah, you're right when you're talking about nitrogen suppressing fires. Okay, so let's talk about occurrence.
You know where it's used?
Where is it used?
It's used also in aerial refueling. I knew that. Aerial refueling, and also it's used in power plants in order to purge the natural gas out of the system before work is being performed so that you don't start a fire.
Huh.
But when you do aerial refueling, that little teeter, cord, umbilical cord, has nitrogen being emitted so that when you come in contact with the prong on the plane, static sparks don't cause the problem.
Doesn't explode the fuel. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I wonder if they had that problem when they first started refueling. Anyway, Earth's atmosphere, 75.51% nitrogen. Says this is a principal source of nitrogen for commerce and industry. Atmosphere contains varying amounts of ammonia, ammonium salts. Yeah, nitrogen, ammonia is NH3. That's nitrogen. One nitrogen atom, three hydrogen atoms. NH3 is ammonia. It's also in saltpeter. That's the stuff. That's a component of gunpowder. KNO3.
Yeah.
Sodium nitrate. Yeah. Sodium nitrate. That's salt.
Saltpeter. They had a slave that was selling saltpeter to both sides of the Civil War, the Confederacy and also the Union.
Yeah. It isn't going to that's fascinating. Yeah. I'm just quickly scanning here. It probably says somewhere, you know, that it's plant food, but I know that plants use nitrogen as part of their process too. All right, let's get back to CO2. Here we go. Here's the thing too. I found this interesting that 400 parts per million is the low end, and upwards of 1,000 parts per million inside a crowded room. So inside there's a lot higher carbon dioxide in crowded rooms than there is in the atmosphere. So if you really want to remove a source of pollution, you know, stop holding White House press conferences with so many bogus leftist reporters. But anyway, it's interesting. And a greenhouse too. A greenhouse has a very high concentration of carbon dioxide. Why? Because the plants grow better. See, look at a greenhouse. The greenhouse is the perfect proof that the greenhouse theory is wrong. Because in a greenhouse, they warm it up and they pump in carbon dioxide to make the plants grow. So the very things that make plants grow in a greenhouse are the very things they want to take out of our atmosphere. In other words, warmer temperatures and carbon dioxide, and saying that it's a pollutant. Well, if it's a pollutant, how does it make plants grow better? That's the greenhouses are proof that the greenhouse theory is bogus, right?
You know, I have designed some poultry houses,
uh-huh.
And every day you got to go through the house and pick up the dead carcasses of dead birds. It just naturally die so many. And they have composters. Barrel composters that turn very, very slowly.
Huh.
So you have to put the elements in there that would make the compost, you know, move. And those elements are like wood chips, leaves, which is carbon-based.
Mm-hmm.
And they start off with dirt on one end.
Are you fertilizing chicken food with dead chickens? Oh, Jesus.
Yeah,
you're feeding the chickens back to the chickens by fertilizer?
It can be chickens, a cow. I mean, that's the way you get rid of carcasses of dead animals. The safe way to turn it back into compost.
But that's how they got mad cow disease, because they were taking they were scraping the skulls and brains and recycling those of dead cows and feeding it back to other cows. This is what the British did.
But they wouldn't compost it though. Compost is just like humans.
Yeah.
I mean, it grows.
Well, no, you put it through the fertilizer process and you compost it. That destroys, you know, the dangerous viruses like mad cow.
It destroys the dangerous bacteria and everything. Yes.
Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease or Jakob's disease, mad cow disease. Yeah. So if you compost it, you get rid of all that stuff. But it's just fascinating. All the things that people, soil and green, it's coming to a place near you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what's interesting is that the submarines, the standard is 8,000 parts per million. So if human beings can stand in a submarine 8,000 parts per million without adverse health effects, that's right from the U.S. Navy. You know, the idea that we have 400 parts per million is somehow dangerous is ludicrous. You know, we need a lot higher levels of carbon dioxide. We're going to get into the UN health treaty problem in the third hour, but I want to finish this one before Jonathan gets here. Yeah, go ahead.
It's funny how you use these agencies for these nefarious schemes, the way mm-hmm. we're seeing. And nobody, you've had very few people, any and all, that would delve into and look at things from what you just done. They just don't do it. They do it by word of mouth, which is deception.
Yeah, yeah. See, this is why Action Radio should have, you know, 10 million listeners, because we do things that nobody else does. We talk about things that nobody else talks about. We are 6 months to a year ahead of Standard News. Now, granted, this article is a year old, but nobody's talking about it. No one's made the connection between sugar and oil, that they're both energy compounds. We do. You know, and all we do is we just talk about things. We use our brains. We use logic and reason. We're not hung up on getting somebody else's opinion, you know, before we say anything, you know, that I have to go find a source, you know, for my revelations on this show. I don't. I just think about them. You know, my thoughts are as valid as your thoughts or as valid as anybody's thoughts. But the biggest problem is that people have had their thoughts invalidated. They don't believe that they can speak truth. They don't believe that they can use their logic and use their reasoning and come up with new combinations of thoughts like we do here every day. So not only are we the ultimate free speech zone, we're actually the ultimate free speech permission zone. You got to give yourself permission.
Well, you
to
know
think.
Where this starts.
What is that?
You know where all this starts, Ed, and I talk about it all the time. It starts with the education of your children, actually what they are not getting and they should be getting.
Well, but from who, though? See, now with my daughter, I talk to her all the time.
From the school.
We had debates
from the school.
You know, from the age of like four. I got her brain working. I said, we're going to start debating. And we had I call them moral dilemmas, questions with no answer. Drove her crazy. But she got really good at it. And I said, okay, now argue the other side. And she could do that too. You know, a brilliant kid. But the way we did
there's some things children should be taught. They should be taught physics. They should be taught chemistry. They should be taught biology. I mean, come on. We was taught that in school. I used to make baking soda bombs. And I had one to go off in my pocket one time, you know, put some baking soda in the bottle, not a bottle, but a little bottle. Yeah, a little bottle.
Yeah.
And put a little water in it. And I was walking to school and one went off in my pocket. Boom. So,
yeah, I stapled my finger once because I was curious. I was about eight. A little hand stapler. Yeah, we all do stupid things as kids. I realized when I saw a staple in my finger, I went, that hurts. So I pulled it out. Of course, I started bleeding. But I couldn't leave it in there. But, yeah, we all do stupid things. It's amazing what comes back in your memory. But here's the thing, though. You know, just the idea that we're questioning carbon dioxide, that it's okay to say that we really need it, that there is a carbon cycle that includes the burning of fossil fuels to release carbon back into the atmosphere, that driving your SUV is actually a recycling program. These are revelations, you know, and that we're making on a daily basis on this show here. And this is why it is so important that people, you know, use this and talk to your kids. Use the way we think on this show as a way to teach your kids. Make new combinations for them. Put new things together in their heads. You know, give them moral dilemmas where they have a question that doesn't have an easy answer. Let them wrestle with it. The best questions, and as I waited with my kid, was where there is no answer. You know, that's the best questions are the ones without an answer that you can't prove or you can't decide. It's not a straightforward thing. And you realize there's gray area in the world. And that's hugely important. Anyway. Let me give us my article here. Most importantly, CO2 is plant food necessary for life on planet Earth. Think back to high school biology, which is just what we were talking about, right? Think back to high school biology and photosynthesis, where water, sunlight, and CO2 combine to produce oxygen and plant grown as fruits, vegetables, grasses, and all forms of plant life that members of the animal kingdom, including humans, eat daily. Yeah, so we are dependent on the carbon cycle of putting carbon dioxide into plants for our own survival. It's just that simple. CO2, back to the article, and warm temperatures. There we go. There's a greenhouse, right? CO2 and warm temperatures are necessary for plant growth and life on Earth. Consider CO2 as plant food or fertilizer, and the nitrogen plays into that too. In fact, that's one of the most important things for plants is to take nitrogen in the air and be able to get into the roots of those nodules, those nitrogen things, and get that into their system too. All right, back to the article. A 100% increase in CO2. Pianki, you're going to love this. A 100% increase in CO2 levels increases plant growth from 22 to 41%. That's almost half as much, okay, depending on plant type. Apart from CO2, temperature also affects plant growth. Warmer temperatures translate to higher growth rates, assuming the other photosynthesis ingredients are in place. So what do you think of that? You double your CO2, you get a 50% almost increase in plant growth. Pianki?
Well, you can go back to the poultry house again. Between times that you take out the grown ones and bring in the chicks, you have to take the compost on the floor and put it in a berm. A berm is just a stack of so it's about 2 or 3 feet tall, and leave it for a period of time, and the microbial action causes heat, and the heat kills pathogens in the compost.
Then that makes sense. That's how fever works. Yeah, that's how we get fevers,
when
to kill the virus.
Go down, then you can spray it back out again and recycle it.
Yeah. So what about the recycling the poop too? Are they collecting that and throwing that in the compost?
It's in the compost, yes.
Okay. So we got chicken bodies, chicken poop. We got leaves, bark.
It's just a miracle how this world is designed, isn't it?
Yeah. And we do it to recycle carbon. And so that it can be burnt, go into the air, and go back into the plants. Okay. Makes sense to me. Yeah. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Yeah. Shadows and dust, as I said in – what was that in remember the Gladiator? Who was that actor? Famous British actor. Shadows and dust. Maximus. That's all we are. Shadows and dust. Echoing through eternity. Okay, fine. Anyway. I don't know how I brought the Gladiator into this, but I did. All right. Plants. Back to the article. Plants have tiny holes on the underside of their leaves called stomata, through which plants ingest CO2. When the CO2 levels are higher, these stomata don't need to open as wide to get the CO2 they need. Plants also lose water through these stomata. Think of a plant breathing, which is what they're doing. Smaller stomata openings mean less water loss, so that with, and this is the important part, so that with higher CO2 levels in the air, plants lose less water and therefore need less water to thrive and can grow in drier, previously inhospitable environments. And that is why the Sahara Desert and deserts in Australia and other places are greening, because they got warmer temperatures and more CO2. It actually causes plants to lose less water for the food that they're getting. I didn't know that. That is fascinating.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, next paragraph. Now, do you have a comment? I mean, feel free.
No, I'm just beginning to think who's behind all this green stuff and what's their motive.
Well, the green movement's really a black movement. Death. You know, it's like they called the plague the Black Death. You know, so it's not a green, if you're going to assign colors to this, I mean, the green movement's really the black movement. You know, I'm not talking skin color. I'm talking philosophy, that they really believe in death, which is what communists, socialists, Marxists, Nazis, fascists all believe. They believe in death. Death is like a necessary means to their end of their utopia. It's quite fascinating. Jonathan's on the line, so I'm going to let him listen for a couple minutes. I want to finish this article. But think about it. Why else would they get rid of carbon dioxide if not to kill millions of people? You know, and here's the problem.
Well,
they kill the compliance.
Two factions is trying to kill all people.
Yeah. We really need like a competing global government to go against them. You know, we need two factions. We need to create another global government faction to oppose them. We need, instead of the United Nations, we need the United Confederacy. Do you want to start it? Wouldn't that be fascinating? We have our own global government. It's called the United Confederacy. We're going to oppose the UN. And we're going to get our own delegates. We're going to get worldwide conservative delegates. Oh, man, this is huge. Think about this, Bianchi. I'm not going to bring Jonathan in. I got his opinion on this. This is my day for revelations. Jonathan, what do you think? A competing world government.
That would be a game changer.
We call the United Confederacy. Jonathan, what do you think?
Well, that's fine. I think, I know that things have gone tragic in Russia and Ukraine, but I think that that was part of why they hated and had to destroy Putin and get him, is because he was bucking these trends. But now I don't know where your major power center would be to start that, but I think that would be great.
The UN is
worthless, of course.
Well, Chris is worthless. Yeah, when you get a chance, go back and listen to the first hour, because especially when I started talking about this article, probably about 7:25 or about 25 minutes past the hour. This is a fascinating article. I just want to finish it up.
You know,
it's so critical. Yeah, go ahead.
And what Jonathan is saying really makes sense, because it was Russia that was against the whole idea of running out of petroleum.
Yep.
Their scientists said that no, it's being naturally produced, like what we just got through talking about.
We did a show on that. Mm-hmm. Abiotic oil,
yeah.
Abiotics without biological materials. Yeah, abiotic oil. Yeah, the three revelations we had, the three game changers, are that the Western states, that land is state land, not federal. The second great revelation, that CO2 is really good for the environment. And the third one is that oil is produced naturally in the earth abiotically. You take those three shows together. Those three are game changers. I got to do a press release on those three.
Mm-hmm.
But they really change everything. All right, let me do a couple more paragraphs here. We're almost done. Putting science classes mm-hmm. aside, higher CO2 levels with slightly warmer temperatures increase the productivity of most plants. This creates a, quote, greening of the planet. So CO2 is actually – you can't have a green movement without CO2. CO2 is the green movement, okay? It says this creates a greening of the planet, combating the effects of fires. This is what Bianca was talking about, combating the effects of fires, deforestation, pest outbreaks, and other attacks on Earth's vegetation. As the planet greens, dry climates become fertile, supporting plant life, which in turn feeds both humans and animals. So CO2 is not the greenhouse gas, it's the green gas. Oh, there's a bumper sticker for you. CO2 is the green gas. Comments? Otherwise, I'm going to move on. We got about five more paragraphs and we're done. Maybe 10 more.
Well, absolutely. I'm glad. I dipped in a little bit earlier, and I'm glad you're doing this, because nobody else is, and all the people, all the industries that should be interested in this. They're all weenies and they're afraid, and they they want to say, you know, don't hurt us, and they don't fight back, they don't explain, and so this is this is really important stuff.
Okay, we'll keep going then. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're fearless here. I mean, if you're not fearless, don't bother. You know, Action Radio is not for lightweights. It's not for cowards. It's not for people without a position or an opinion. You know, we want the strong. We want the people that are courageous enough to take on everybody, you know, that is going to try to destroy our world here. All right. Article says, putting science class aside, higher CO2 levels with slightly warmer temperatures increases the productivity of most plants. This creates a greening of the planet. Oh, I read that. I'm sorry. This CO2 fertilization correlated with an 11% increase in foliage cover from 1982 to 2010. Think about that. CO2 fertilization, not greenhouse gas, not destruction of the earth, not pollution. CO2 fertilization correlated with an 11% increase in foliage cover from 1982 to 2010 across many arid regions of the world. You want to talk about your rainforest? This is what helps your rainforest, folks. Okay, so the left, the Green Party, the Black Party, the Party of Death, the Black Death, that's what they are. All right, back again. Think of the resulting benefits, including the reduction of hunger, disease, and poverty in Africa and the Middle East. Why is this not a good thing? Excessively limiting CO2 starves the plant kingdom and ultimately the animal kingdom, which is dependent on plants for food. Carbon, the basis of life, originates with carbon dioxide consumed by plants, eventually converted into carbon-based fossil fuels via the sun, making it a form of solar energy and completely natural. This fact alone should be applauded by the environmental left. Fossil fuels solar energy. I'm going to say that one more time. Fossil fuels are solar energy. Pianki.
You ever heard the term cold dead? When you come up to a corpse, that you don't know if it's alive or dead until you touch it. So anything that's alive is going to naturally produce heat. I mean, it's the process. There's things in it, in our body. That's why we carry a temperature, what, 98.6, I think it is.
Ooh, you're good. Yeah, I think
because
so, too.
You got activity of life going on within your body.
Mine's actually a little cooler. Mine's 97 points. I'm actually a degree below, you know, the average. I don't know what that means. But my temperature's always been a little cooler. You know, maybe I need a tune-up.
You're a cool guy.
What's that?
You're a cool guy.
Well, apparently. Thank you. Not for anything I did. It just occurs naturally that way. Jonathan, what do you think so far? That solar that oil energy is solar energy through the recycling, through the carbon cycle?
Well, it is. There's a meme on Facebook of young scientists deciding, you know, if only we could figure out a way to take some device to take in sun, emit, you know, convert CO2 to oxygen, and produce wood. You know, if we're trying to invent, it's you know, it's called a tree.
It's already been done.
It's like God did it a long time ago.
Well, and we talked about this earlier. Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
What? No, I don't remember if we did. But the thing is, I'm really disappointed in all the Republican Party and conservatives, because if we win all the battles we're going to win, we're going to lose everything on this, because they're going to go in and say it's a health, you know, it's a threat to our health. They're going to impose communism using this nonsense. Even if we won everything else, we're going to lose it all on this because all the people that know better are just total weenies. And they just won't, you know, they just like, oh, don't hurt us. Don't speak mean to us. And I mean, these guys know better, but, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. I think they do know.
I think they know. You know, they just don't want us.
We
to
get
know,
all man. Our energy. Look, listen to this. We get all our energy, not from the sun or sun-like objects. Well, the core of the earth is what? It's sun-like objects.
Yeah.
So you get energy from the core of Earth because it's producing the heat, producing the energy that causes it to be what it is.
It's a nuclear hydrogen fusion reaction, I think, is going on at the core, if I remember. We can look into that. But, Jonathan, we had a...
It's the same thing as the sun.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, everything's the same. It's just a question of where it is. So that it's interesting that the sun might be considered a big planet if it were cool enough on the outside. Jonathan, we made an interesting revelation earlier that sugar and oil are both forms of energy that really aren't that far apart, because one is hydrocarbon and the other is carbohydrate. and the only difference being oxygen atoms. What do you think of that?
I hadn't thought of that, but that makes perfect sense.
Well, neither did we until this morning. I mean, it just came out on the show.
And remember that we can see the light spectrum of distant objects. Now, of course, when people like play Nancy Drew and they get carried away and think that they can discuss, you know, they can discover things in another galaxy, they're really stretching. Mm-hmm. But the evidence is pretty strong that as we talked about before, that Saturn's moon of Triton, which is much bigger than our moon, and has tons of hydrocarbons on it.
Hmm.
You know, so there's no, you know, there's never been any life that we know of on Triton in, you know, orbiting Saturn, and they got gigantic quantities of basically fossil fuels.
Do they have the Exxon signs up there yet? I mean, are we mining? Are we drilling?
I don't know.
Are we drilling Triton?
I think the left is protesting or something up there, probably.
Yeah. Well, here's the difference, though.
But,
Triton doesn't have oxygen. That's probably the only reason they don't have life there. If they had an atmosphere and they had oxygen, the hydrocarbons would make oil. There'd be organic compounds.
It's also extremely cold. But,
well, that's part of the problem, too.
But see, the oxygen – now, when you say the oxygen, of course, the oxygen is bound up in the hydrocarbons. You know, that's part of the complication.
I remember that the way the hydrocarbons form is they don't have oxygen. Otherwise, they'd burn under the earth because the oxygen would oxygenate. It would create a burning thing. And that's why oxygen is required for burning fuel, petroleum. But in the forming of the hydrocarbon chains, before it becomes burnable, before it adds oxygen to it, I think the actual hydrocarbons are just hydrogen and carbon. I can do more research into that, but that was my understanding from the show.
Maybe, but that's but for example, we say that for example, there is no hydrogen available on planet Earth. Well, there is. It's bound up in water. It's bound up in chemicals, but there's no free supply of hydrogen. Well, actually, there's some hydrogen in the atmosphere, but you can't, you know, get a net and like capture, you know, catch the hydrogen.
Well, I think the Pacific Ocean, you know, we could take a little
hydrogen. Well, yeah, it occurs at night from condensation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, it costs energy to liberate hydrogen from water molecules or other molecules. So hydrogen is a tremendous way of transporting energy from one place to another, but it's not a source of, it's not a fuel, at least not on Earth. I mean, you know, in the nuclear fusion of the sun, it's the best fuel in the universe. But in terms of what we can do on Earth,
it's a good fuel. You remember the name Andy Granatelli?
I've heard that name. Go ahead, Bianca.
You don't remember
who's
him?
That?
He was the one that had the hydrogen. He had the hydrogen fuel engine. A car at the Indy 500 that was running away from everybody. Remember SCP?
Well, it does work. I mean, we went to the moon on hydrogen fuel cells. There's no question that the technology is proven, but my point is you can't just drill for hydrogen somewhere. You can't get a hydrogen mine. You have to get the hydrogen somewhere. And you know, once you have hydrogen, it's just,
There was a guy, an inventor who produced a hydrogen cell. His name was Bloom, Bloom, and he was taking it out of sand. Matter of fact, some of Google's facilities somewhere is being powered by that apparatus that he had, and he would demonstrate. It was no big larger than a loaf of bread, the one that he had that could power a whole house. So there has been, and all of a sudden he just disappeared too, by the way. But I remember.
Isn't that interesting?
It was the Bloom cell, Bloom or something like that.
I'm going to write that down. Well, what's interesting is that if we could use the splitting of, we could use water, and they have heavy water experiments in nuclear power. I'm not sure the physics of it. I have to look that up. But if you could use the splitting of the water atom in nuclear power to create electricity, and then take the hydrogen and use that as a fuel source as well. And when they get both back in the environment, they're going to join up again in water vapor. So we just take the energy of releasing the atoms, and then the fusion of those atoms later on is kind of taken care of automatically, like CO becoming CO2 when it comes out your tailpipe. That might be some – has anybody looking into that? Anybody know anything about using water, splitting the water atom to create nuclear fission energy, and then maybe using the fusion again to create power as well, or to use those free hydrogen atoms to then make fuel from them? Anybody know anything about that? Is that even possible?
Yeah, I think you're getting in the weeds there, but we need less for more. But yeah, I mean, there's tremendous potential. It's true. And you were talking about, interesting, one of the things that I think the least talked about thing is what I call active geothermal, not just, warm water that, trickles up and create what they call hot springs.
Mm-hmm.
But, the Earth's crust is very hot, and we can generate electricity from the heat in the Earth's core. But but I agree. Did you look at Jerry Corsi's book? I think the Black. What's it called?
Where he
talks about abiotic oil.
No,
Jerome
Corsi. Yeah, I haven't done that. I'm going to write that down. Jerome Corsi.
It would just repeat what you've said, but it would endorse. It would just confirm what you've been talking about.
Yeah, I use a bunch of sources. I mean, there are a lot of sources on it. I tend not to do books because I can't use them on the show because they're big. Let me just finish this up. I think you're going to find some fascinating. Then I want to get to Jonathan issues, legal issues that you have that you sent me and that we can talk about here. So it's interesting. It says here there is a social cost to reducing or eliminating carbon and CO2, contrary to the supposed intention of I'm going to call the Brandon Insurrection Executive Order. Advocating for less atmospheric CO2 and cooler temperatures will cause a browning of the planet, less food, more starvation, disease, and misery around the world. Is that part of the, quote, fundamental transformation, or, quote, great reset, blah, blah, blah. Is CO2 reduction a backhanded means of population control? I would have to say yes. Panel?
I don't know. I'm not the Great Reset thing is. I believe in it, but it seems a little vague. I'm not sure what the definition actually is.
Well, I think a lot of it's economic, but I have two theories. One that they want to keep a lot of people controlled so that they can maximize their profits and live their easy life. And the other theory is that they want to reduce the population so they have more, I don't know what, resources for themselves. I'm not sure why it is, but so there's two schools of thought. I'm not sure which one it is, but the problem is they're still trying to reduce the CO2, and reducing CO2, they're basically stealing food from all of us, and that's where I have a problem with it. Pianki, you want a quick comment there? And then we'll finish this one up.
Yeah, this was called Bloom Energy. And okay. Lo and behold, it was speaking on producing – it was speaking on challenging Tesla. So I'm going to put some links in Action Radio webpage on Facebook
okay.
for you to read.
Yeah, the Action Radio group. Anybody's welcome to take a look at it, and you can join it if you want to comment and post. And I'll take those. I'll share it. And we'll take a look. All right. So let me just finish this up here. One of President Trump's actions was to end funding for a United Nations Population Control Agency. Yet another reason for the left to hate him, right? Is the Brandon Insurrection through carbon restrictions a sneaky way of pushing UN and globalist population control? Unless this talk of reducing carbon is not actually about the environment, but instead about social engineering and control. I believe it is. I think it's much more likely that environmentalism basically has become social engineering and control. I absolutely believe that. You take a look at any of the climate projection plans, the first thing they want to do, get rid of your car, get rid of single-family homes. that's the elimination of freedom. That's what this is about. Article says, much like how the myriad arbitrary COVID rules and restrictions are more about money and control than about the virus. Here's one. The Asia-Pacific Forum on Women, Law, and Development, a consultant organization to the UN, gave a press conference in Paris claiming that if we are to address the climate crisis, we need to challenge the structural causes of the crisis, which lies on unequal distribution of wealth, of carbon, and of power. See? That's what it all comes down to. Leftism. Yep. Note the two causes. Oh, right, go ahead, Jonathan. Yeah.
No, it's been long been called the watermelon, environmentalist. Green on the outside, red on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Note two of the causes.
It's really communism.
It is really communism. Well, I believe environmentalism has become communism. It didn't start out that way. I mean, we had really serious environmental problems in the 70s, I remember. My problem with the environmentalists is they don't know when to declare victory, quit, and go home. That's their problem. And then they became socialists. It became the new cause. It says, note two of the causes, wealth and power. Those should be in the hands of the ruling class, not the hoi polli. I'm not sure what that is. Is that what Biden and the left's climate crusade is really all about? The Green New Deal, for example, is not about the environment, but instead top-down government control. AOC, AOC's chief of staff, Saikat Chakrabarty, admitted as much. Quote, the interesting thing about the Green New Deal is it wasn't originally a climate thing at all. We really think of it as a how do you change the entire economy thing. This is out of Karl Marx's handbook, The Struggle Against the, quote, unequal distribution of wealth. In the last paragraph, if the global do-gooders were truly concerned about the poor, they would embrace concepts such as CO2 fertilization that raise the standard of living of poorer countries. Instead, their goal is to redistribute wealth and resources to the point that everyone is poor, except, of course, for those in charge. This explains the war on carbon, which is actually a war on prosperity. Welcome to Joe Biden's America. Pianki, what do you think? I know he's there somewhere. Maybe not. All right.
I think we discovered something.
I think we discovered a lot of things.
You're opening the curtain. We're going to have to rename you Toto.
I pulled the curtain back and revealed the truth about carbon, that it's really social engineering and wealth distribution. Yeah, thank you. Play something real quick. We'll be right back with Jonathan's topics. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Gee, I love that saying. Made it up after heart surgery. I'm walking down the street going, what am I going to call the theme for my show when I get it? Just came to me. Yeah, and here we are. Jonathan, what's on your mind this week?
Well, a lot of things, but to transition, let me do a short thing on that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is maybe me being snarky a bit, but...
Oh, please do.
The president, and I confirmed this off of the website, the White House website, has declared the...
Declare the what? You just cut out. Come on back.
Huh?
You just cut out for a second. I missed everything you said after it has declared. What did they declare? Oh, this is frustrating. Jonathan, your line is gone. Call us back or
I'm here.
Now you're here.
Hello?
Wherever you are now, stop right there because it's working.
Well, I haven't moved.
Oh, it's just so weird then. I don't know.
I'm gremlins. Just sitting here in the middle.
Huh, maybe it's the FBI.
But anyway, so the president has declared the use of the Defense Production Act to make baby formula. Now, and I confirmed this on their website.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Defense Production Act, and this, I'm going to do this, reads, A, allocation of materials, services, and facilities.
Uh-huh.
The president is authorized, one, to require – can you hear me?
Yeah, I just – questioning the use of the word president. I know it's in the article, but as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Well, this is any president. This is from the statute.
Oh, that makes sense.
The president is authorized to require that performance under contractual orders, other than contracts of employment, which he deems necessary or appropriate, to promote the national defense shall take priority over performance under any other contract or order, and for the purpose of assuring such priority, to require acceptance and performance of such contract orders in preference to other contracts and orders by a person he finds to be capable of their performance, and two, to allocate materials, services, and facilities in such manner upon such conditions and to such extent as she shall deem necessary appropriate to promote the national defense. So he is declaring that to make baby formula, which, of course, is a shortage because the Biden administration shut down production a couple months ago. So, of course, there's this crisis that they refuse to admit, which is because the Biden created the crisis by shutting down the biggest production of baby formula on the theory that there could possibly be, it was probably not, any contamination. And, of course, like most leftists, so the idea is let's let tens of thousands of babies starve because maybe one of them might get sick from something that is, something that was not justified, that was not documented to be an actual problem. But it also means that they shut down production without any plan. Yeah. They didn't plan for...
The crazy part is that they shut down production. They suspected a bacterial infection. I mean, I'm sure they suspect that about virtually every food plant, every slaughterhouse, every processing thing, is probably going to have bacterial infections all the time. That's why they clean up. That's why they try and stop them. But normally what happens, like from romaine lettuce to anything with E. coli, they do a recall. But they don't close down the farm. They don't stop growing romaine lettuce. Why was it necessary at this point to close down the factory because they had a recall? Recalls, I mean, Toyota has recalls. Their braking system, had problems a while back, and cars or the gears were having problems. They couldn't get out of drive, and off these cars would go, right? They didn't shut down Toyota. They just recalled the cars. So why would they do this unless they had a plan to shut down and take away baby formula, just like they shut down and took away oil so they could use the Strategic Petroleum Reserve? To me, it seems part of the nationalization of our industries. They've nationalized healthcare with COVID policy. They've nationalized energy policy by stealing all of it, and distributing it through the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which they're probably going to buy more oil, and so that all oil becomes government oil, or they get it from other countries. And now they're stealing baby formula. So you can't feed babies unless you go through the nationalist government baby council organization, department.
So that's what it looks like. How did all this baby formula get down on the southern border? Did the government go around buying it all up? And if he could do that, why come he can't use money to build a wall?
Yeah, that's
It seems pretty clear.
Hold that question, because I want to get to the whole idea of a recall, first of all. Why couldn't they just recall the product? Why did the FDA have to close this down? Is there any precedent for that? And do you think they're trying to nationalize the baby food industry like everything else they're trying to nationalize?
Well, I don't know what they're doing, but it's because they did it incompetently. I mean, like I say, that what you're describing, smacks of incompetence or malignancy.
Evil. Or evil. They're either stupid or dangerous.
Yeah.
Of course, it could be both.
And more importantly, who's behind these thoughts?
Yeah. Well, why baby
formula? I don't know. I mean, we don't know. I mean, this is where we need to have a House committee investigating who's behind this and everything. Because you raise good, because of course you see people freaking out, and when the population is freaking out about how they're going to feed their babies, they're easy to control when they feel vulnerable and at risk. So
they're just doing it for the children. Well, let's get to Pianki's questions, because those are good questions too. Pianki, why don't you state your questions again?
Well, more importantly, who's behind all this? Is the government going around buying up all the baby formula to put it down the southern border for incoming immigrants? Or what's going on?
It would have to be DHS or something. They I don't see how it could. I mean, I don't know that anybody's traced it out. Although Congresswoman Kim Kamarek, is that her right name?
I'm not sure.
Been a leader on this.
Then why would they be allowed to create a national, what do we want to call it, a national emergency, a national it would be another national emergency like the damn pandemic.
Well, the what do they call that act? Military. What's it called? The starts with a P.
The Defense Production Act.
Defense Production. Okay. So why is this a defense issue? Why aren't they just opening the plant up?
Well, that's what I was getting to. It's not.
Yeah.
Unless we're gonna send the baby formula to Ukraine, which that's where I'm being snarky.
That's not snarky. I mean, they're sending $40 billion to you, or trying to send $40 billion to Ukraine. I mean, that's the entire Russian defense budget. So we're basically giving Ukraine Russia's defense budget, which is kind of interesting when you think about it. You know, but this is crazy. And they didn't have to close the plant down. They just had to find the source of the bacterial infection. I mean, we don't shut down GM because they have to recall a part. You know, you find the assembly line that makes the part. Or you send the cars into repair and replace the part, but you don't shut down GM's assembly line. So why are we shutting down baby formula? You know, why is the FDA doing this? And of course, I'm suspicious of the FDA anyway, you know, just because of their horrendous work of suppressing hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So they're already suspect. So it doesn't make sense. And the Defense Production Act?
The White House.
What is, go ahead.
The White House declaration, first of all, the White House declaration says that 4 infants fell ill.
Right.
So there was concerns about bacterial contamination. Of course, infants fall ill all the time. That doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the baby formula.
Mm-hmm.
but of course, then it's combined with COVID pandemic. You know, it has to be. There's a meme on Facebook that Vladimir Putin is drinking all the baby formula.
Post these.
That's
you
why
put these on the Action Radio group. That's hysterical.
I probably should. You're right.
Post all these things.
What I learned
yourself. Yeah, we need these.
What I learned a long time ago was to stockpile them, the memes, because you never know when you can bring them out and hit a liberal with them. So I have a huge library of them. But anyway, so here's what the White House says. Adequate supply of infant formula is critical to the health and safety of the millions of children who depend on the formula for essential nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
The federal government has worked in the last several months to address this shortfall. Now, they use, you know, politicians in general use this word work. I'm not sure they really know what it means. You know, the federal government has been working on this, so I don't think they really know what the word working means. But additional measures are needed to ensure an adequate supply. But see, this is the thing. First of all, it's not a national defense. Okay, so the disruption threatens
the
continued functioning of the national.
The military relies on it.
That is, this is undermining critical infrastructure that is essential to the national defense. Lack of baby formula. That's what they're claiming. So
Wait a minute. Did you hear the reports coming out saying that the uses of Karo syrup and old methods of making babies? See, when I was a kid, we had Karo syrup, and we had carnation milk at the time. Yeah, and that's what mothers made formulas out of that they couldn't produce with their breasts. So now I've read some articles with scientists of medicine is saying that those formulas can be dangerous. Well, goddamn, I'm standing right here right now, a product of that.
Exactly. Well, this is the tyranny of the experts.
Yep.
You know, this is the tyranny of experts that, you know, we can't. I mean, it is ridiculous. I mean, for that, people are, you know, like people are complaining about breastfeeding. Now, they're, you know, Pete Buttigieg, the now Secretary of Commerce, and his husband, you know, yeah, they can't breastfeed. And we kind of warned you of that, you know, a long time ago. But then people are saying that, you know, what am I going to do? It's like, well, what did the humanity? And, you know, I understand. I'm not trying to pick on people. What bugs me is arguments that make no sense. You know, there are issues that I don't care about, but when I hear an argument, it just drives me up a wall. So, you know, how did the human race survive for, according to them,
before baby formula,
200,000, basically 200,000 years,
right?
According to the evolutionists, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just like, okay, you lost me at, you know, I don't care. I don't care who's right or wrong, or somebody maybe has a problem, or maybe they could use the benefit. Because the thing is suppose the people who can breastfeed, all breastfed, there'd be enough supply for those who maybe have a problem with breastfeeding.
Huh.
You know.
Well, you know what else they used to do to me, Jonathan? If you had a mother who had a child and she was lacking on producing, she would go to another woman in the community and ask her, could you breastfeed my child because of the problem I'm having? And then also, you remember there was a period of time that if a woman was breastfeeding in public, she would stand a reason to receive a fine for doing such a thing.
Yeah. That's – well, you know, there's a way – there's, I mean, that's ridiculous, but probably there's a, you know, everyone takes it to extreme. They, I don't know. I don't understand it. But, yeah, that
this
I mean,
action
natural,
has been going on for quite
natural,
some time.
But, yeah, it's perfectly it natural to breastfeed, although people who are, you know, in your, you know, just have a chip on their shoulders maybe take it too far. But yeah, there's no, so anyway, so the thing is, like I say, it somehow it's for the national defense to cure a problem that the Biden administration created.
I was gonna say I found a page on homemade baby formula since we were talking about. I got the formula right here, raw milk baby formula. 2 cups whole raw cow's milk, 1/4 cup homemade liquid whey, 4 tablespoons lactose, 1/4 teaspoon Bifidobacterium infantis, 2 or more tablespoons good quality cream, 1/2 teaspoon unflavored high vitamin, you know, fermented cod liver oil, you know, they got virgin olive oil, coconut oil, which is what Chancey's big on, Frontier brand nutritional yeast flakes, gelatin, filtered water, and acerola powder. And that's how you make breast milk. I mean, that's how you make artificial breast milk. Yep. Artificial formula.
You also got to watch out. For the tyranny of the experts. So all these warnings come out of all these Karens who have been, you know, whatever, who've been in the government forever, saying like, oh, don't water down the breast milk because, and then you're like, okay, read what exactly they're saying.
Yep.
Why would it be dangerous? Well, because, you know, if you watered it down, you know, eventually the baby might not get enough vitamins and minerals. Well, yeah, but for a week or something while you're waiting, you know, a week or two, that's, it'd be fine. You know, but the idea that if you, you know, the assumption is that if, you know, if for the next 3 years, the baby drank only watered-down baby formula, they might eventually get malnourished on certain vitamins and minerals. But that's a stupid argument by the experts when it comes to dealing with a short-term problem. So yeah. When you read what these experts – you get into the details of what these experts are saying. But anyway, I just wanted to bring the law to your attention there.
It's fascinating.
You know, it doesn't.
A guy that says the FDA says that this Defense Production Act isn't necessary. I found another article here too. Dr. Jockers. On the top here, talking about homemade baby formula. This one's even easier. They've got 2 cups filtered water, 2 teaspoons collagen, 4 teaspoons lactose, 2 cups raw whole grass-fed milk, 2 tablespoons heavy cream, and it's got other basically the same things that the other one had. So it's really easy to make a formula. I find that.
Well, apparently, Abbott. I mean, what you're raising there is more of the tyranny of the experts. So Abbott Nutrition Laboratories must use some kind of magic when they make their baby formula that you can't use, you know, at home. You know, they have magic but baby formula that's not available to anybody else.
Exactly. It's crazy. You can make your own.
Yeah.
I got 2 sites. It took me 30 seconds to find it. Homemade baby formula. So people don't think about that. Well, here's I want to get your reaction to this, Jonathan. And Pianchi, we got the story in Breitbart. FDA commissioner, don't think we need the Defense Production Act. This is the guy that closed down the Abbott Labs. The Abbott Labs are open, by the way. The ones that make the baby formula, they're actually working again. Now, they still have a ways to go to get their baby formula, you know, cooking. But they're actually open. So the shortage is going to be dealt with soon. Anyway, it says on Monday's broadcast of ABC's Good Morning America, FDA Commissioner Dr. Robert M. Califf argued that invoking the Defense Production Act isn't needed to fix the baby formula shortage because baby formula manufacturers have already increased production. There has been more formula purchased over the last month than the month before the recall. And, quote, there is formula out there. It's just not in the right place at the right time because of supply chain disruptions due to Abbott shutting down one of its plants. So if it's not needed, why are we doing it? The very person who's enforcing it says not needed.
Well, then this is where citizens have to be on the lookout for these things because it's like the last time we heard about the Defense Production Act, it was over COVID. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all about why doesn't President Trump invoke the Defense Production Act? Well, it's not magic. It's like if you invoke the Defense Production Act, it doesn't magically create, you know, ventilators or other things like that. It, you know, if the factories are working as fast as they can, and you come along and whip them and say work faster, you know, they're not going to work any faster.
Yeah.
And invoking the Defense Production Act, you know, it allows for people to as I read, it allows for the diversion. It allows for the prioritization production. Mm-hmm. It's like if you're making something, you know, if the private industry is making something as a luxury item, like VCRs, and like we need you to make, you know, smart bombs, it allows them to shift it over. But it doesn't create something from nothing,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, is what leftists always think. and it doesn't, you know, and if the factories are voluntarily doing everything they can, invoking the Defense Production Act doesn't add anything. And that was the thing. So Trump went to these industries. He'd have all these meetings with the industry and say, you know, we're on board. We're doing everything we can. And so why would you whack them with the Defense Production Act when they're already doing everything you're asking them to do?
Yeah, they're already making formula.
Anyway.
I thought of a terrible pun, though, because we're talking about the military, you know, needing baby formula. And I guess that would have to go to the infantry.
Oh, shit. How bad. Now you're talking like Matt Dentino, my friend. Yeah, my friend, my lifetime friend, Matt Dentino. He's like, he never passes up a pun. He would, he'd have
one terrible joke.
Oh, that's terrible.
It really is.
I'll tell Matt about that.
Go.
So,
all right. I want to
you're bad.
Yeah, totally. Well, Bianchi, do you have a comment before we switch subjects?
Well, I'm saying that this stuff smells suspicious. It's like they wanted to keep the hydroxychloroquine, if that's the pronunciation of the word, away
Almost.
From people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing the same thing with this baby form. They are creating these emergencies. And we got to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good way to put it because everything is a created emergency. We have no fuel shortage. We have a created emergency. We have no baby formula shortage. It's a created emergency. Well, it actually is, you know, temporarily, but we know what the cure is. I think it's for nationalizing. The COVID nationalized healthcare and mandates and lockdowns. You know, baby formula is going to nationalize, you know, food. Seizing our oil is nationalizing energy production. I think a lot of this is backdoor nationalization. I think this is really going on here. The leftists want control of everything. Jonathan?
To follow your argument, beware. Mm-hmm. And again, we want all citizens. We don't want just a bunch of citizens listening to the radio to be told what to do. We want all citizens to be armed to immediately recognize these scams mm-hmm. without waiting to be told and to jump on them. You know, so the next step would be, oh my God, here's what we've got to do. Because of this crisis, like, you know, the proposals that will come next would fit your narrative of we got to centralize, you know, whatever. You know,
well,
smart
growth, the idea of the urban plan. Yeah, the planned communities, the planned economy, the planned, you know, energy use, everything. You know, the planned land use.
That capitalism doesn't work. We have to have a planned economy.
Yeah. Which doesn't work. It's the ultimate thing. Let's switch around a little bit. I want to see what you know about the Michael Sussman trial. Some of the things maybe we're not being told about, things you're hearing about in Washington. Let's get into what that really is all about without all the fluff that the articles are saying. What's happening?
Now, this is huge. This is huge, and it's being underreported, and it is blowing, you know, it's blowing the everything. Well, I mean, it should. Again, if it weren't for the fact that the news media is going to ignore it, I think it was Rush Limbaugh said the most powerful, the greatest power of the news media is the power to ignore.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, Durham, John Durham, the U.S. attorney for Connecticut, who was appointed by Trump as a special prosecutor, a special counsel to go after the origins of the Russiagate
mm-hmm.
thing, must be the slowest human being on Earth.
Yeah, the Department of Molasses. Department of Molasses. Investigations.
I mean, I guess it's sort of like the tortoise and the hare. You know, he's slowly inching towards activity. So he indicted a Clinton lawyer, Sussman, mm-hmm. for a single count. And, you know, they don't do that.
How many years? How many years for that single count? It's like 6 years, 7 years for that single count. How long has he been doing
Max.
This?
Oh, yeah. He's been, right, he's been going all that. So he's got this single count saying that the attorney, the Clinton attorney lied to the FBI saying that Trump had Trump's server in New York had some kind of secret connection to the server for Alpha Bank in Russia, which is the dumbest possible idea you can think of. It's just,
Alpha's not a Russian
word.
The first thing that struck me is Alpha's not a Russian word. You won't find the Russian bank.
Well,
Alpha. It'd be named Vladivostok Bank or something like that. It'd not be named Alpha. That's
yeah,
English
maybe.
Word. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? It's not a
right.
not a Russian word.
Yeah.
Alpha Bank. Oh, please.
But here, let me go. But the thing is, it's not just that. It's the fact that the whole theory of like, why in the heck would you do this? The other thing too is what bothers me with. It's like the idea that on January 6th, they want to know who paid for it. And I've joked here, I've talked before, it's like, how much money does it take, you know, to have some soccer hooligans brawl with police? You know, okay, let's run up, you know, let's add up the bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. I mean, so if you would, you know, if the fact that they're going to disagree with, you know, it's the fact that, if you imagine that Trump's campaign was colluding with Russia, why would you need all this stuff? You know, it's like, okay, you know, you don't like Hillary, we don't like Hillary, you know, say bad things about Hillary. Why do you need a super sophisticated, improbable, computer thing that nobody's ever heard of that makes no sense,
right?
Just to say, let's say bad things about Hillary. I mean, it's just the whole thing is just the level of paranoia of these people is just amazing. Okay, Twitter here, my Twitter page is not letting me find this. Really, the quote now is there's a John. Oh crap! I can't find what I was kind of read about. But they said the FBI said that it took them about 24 hours to figure out that this whole theory made absolutely no sense. And to ignore
and how long
it.
Ago was that?
How
long ago was that?
Like in
2016.
2016. Okay.
But so it's now 2022.
The FBI,
that's 6 years ago.
Uh-huh.
All right. So my problem with John Durham, isn't he part of the deep state?
He
strikes me as a Bill Barr. You know, it's not election fraud unless there's enough to overturn the election. Well, that's like saying there's not enough cheating to disqualify you because you didn't win. that's crazy. You know, that doesn't matter. You know, you don't – it's like if someone robs a bank – and they don't steal enough money to put the bank out of business. Is it a robbery? Well, yes, it is. You know, election fraud at any level is enough to overturn, to disqualify the candidate who cheated. You know, and so this idea that's Bill Barr's philosophy. So the fact that Bill Barr, I'm sure, speaking of John Durham, the molasses investigator, who's got one count after 6 years of investigating, that is pitiful. That is hopeless. That is unsatisfactory.
It is.
You know, that's he shouldn't have, yeah. Trump should have gotten rid of him after the first year. I mean, you sit Hillary down, you say, what did you know? When did you know? Where did you spend the money? Show us the books, or are you going to go to jail? You're probably going to go to jail anyway, but maybe we can get your sentence down a little bit. Where did the money go? Why did you do that? Who was involved in rigging the Trump campaign? Who was involved in stealing the election? Let's hear it. I mean, that would be day one of my investigation. And she said, oh, no, I didn't have anything. I didn't know that. I said, okay, fine. We're going to ask everybody else in your organization. So here's your chance to avoid perjury. Tell us everything you know, because we're going to find out sooner or later, probably sooner, from all your underlings. And then your ass is going to be
That's
how I do it.
That's, I assume, what this prosecution is about, is that this is a lawyer who, if he's convicted of anything, loses his law license and under a crime theory. Mm-hmm. And yet they're still fighting back. I mean, instead of just saying, okay, what do you want to know? This assessment, you know, I'll spill. Of course, I was talking to Caroline, the author of The Dark Side of the Law, what used to be called Sneaky Judge Tricks, which I like better. You know, I was talking to her about this, and it's kind of like asking someone in the middle of a mafia from the mafia. It's one thing to tell Sussman, like, look, let's not go through this prosecution. Just spill the beans. And like, you know, yeah, that's like, you know, the talent, someone's flipping on the Cosa Nostra. But the thing is, and the only thing they've got Sussman on is that when he went to the FBI and delivered this phony story, that he said he was not doing it on behalf of a client. That's the lie.
Right.
They didn't get it. They're not charging him with the total, you know, excuse me, expletive delete of lie that there was some, you know, collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign, which later we know was a total lie. It was completely proven false. And again, this was then taken by the political people at the FBI. And I mean, and this is what, so a lot of information is coming out here that has very little to do with Sussman. They are blowing the lid off of, off of the Hillary campaign. It's clear that this whole thing was briefed to the top of the Hillary Clinton campaign. Mark Elias, you know, he testified very helpfully, because I guess he had no choice. All of this investigation was being briefed to the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton and the top of the campaign manager, and all this stuff, you know, this. And so it was going out there, and he admitted that Fusion GPS was doing opposition research for the Hillary campaign, and on and on and on. So, 99% of what is being learned is totally damning to the Democrats, but it has almost nothing to do with this one defendant, Sussman. What he's charged with is he didn't tell the FBI that he was
like a parking ticket.
He was giving
It's like a parking ticket compared to vote fraud. I mean, why isn't he being charged with vote fraud? I mean, the whole purpose of going to Russia to make a fake dossier was to throw the election to Hillary Clinton. That's what this is all about. Mm-hmm. Where's that charge? And why isn't Sussman being made to flip on all these people or get like a 30-year jail sentence or whatever the charge is for overthrowing the U.S. government? Which comes under treason,
well,
as far as I'm concerned. That's ultimately what they're doing. They threw the election. They cheated. They stole the election. They actually engaged in a coup and a cover-up that goes on to this day with the January 6th committee. I mean, put me in charge. I'll do more work in a day than Sussman's done in 6 years.
Right.
Give me subpoena power. I'll create an investigation.
You know, and then that information was used to commit a fraud on the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act court,
to
wrongfully investigate bad with the names. You know, all the Chris.
So he's spying.
Yes,
on the Trump campaign.
They're spying on the Trump campaign people.
Right.
You know, all these things happened because of what Sussman did, and Sussman being charged with the parking ticket, like it was with jaywalking.
Yeah. So the FBI is involved because someone who were the people that did the actual spying, you know, the wiretaps, the spies in Trump's own office. How about those people? Why aren't they on trial at this point? You know, why isn't the people that use the information, they use that information in the campaign? Why aren't those people on trial?
Right. And yesterday it said that Berkowitz, or FBI Special Agent Scott Hellman, testified that he and another agent determined the data and conclusions provided by Sussman to Baker was bogus within a day of receiving the thumb drives. Now, the thing is, if you did that, if you went in there and you said, you know, I believe that Biden the trouble with using this example is Biden actually is doing those things. But let's say you went in there with this story that, you know, is not true about Biden. They would charge you with lying to the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've defended a guy who borrowed his dad's, you know, sports Jeep off-road, you know, and got it stuck in the mud in a swamp, and he reported it stolen so that his dad wouldn't know that he took the car. He was prosecuted for making a false police report.
Yep.
So, I mean, here that the FBI is saying that within a day they figured out that it was bogus. But then it got up to the political people, and they went and ran with it for years.
Knowing it was false.
So, so this is proof that the political people knew it was false. Now, let's get back to some of the problems, because I think it was – I haven't told the name. Margaret Kelly? No. Anyway, let me get back to this, that the the judge, Cooper, in the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia is according to news reports, married to the daughter of Lisa Page. You remember who Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were?
Yeah, the lovebirds. They just want big, happy family over justice, aren't they? They just the judges and the, you know, and they're all very incestuous over there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, welcome to the,
and
welcome
the judge
to the,
allowed
the judicial family. Yeah.
And so they tried to seat a jury in D.C., and the judge allowed – first of all, the judge although the judge is allowing a lot of stuff in, he excluded a lot of stuff that would be harmful to Hillary. So on the jury, we have an avowed supporter of AOC. We have someone who says he hates Trump openly. He's seated on the jury. And then, again, this is partly because I think Durham, you know, a private attorney would have raised holy hell over that. But Durham's like, you know, okay. But the judge allowed. Then we have a major Democrat donor, and
it's like the January 6th committee. It's like the same people.
Yes, the grand jury for this case, or the jury, the trial jury, is like the grand January 6th committee. And so it don't, and remember, it only takes one to find them not guilty.
So the fix is already in this.
So
is what you're saying.
I think so. Yeah, and it's going to look really bad if they're found not guilty.
So it goes to my theory that John Durham is part of the deep state cover up, appointed by Bill Barr, you know, with Trump's permission, not knowing that this guy was a deep state suck up, incompetent, or just stooge. He's an apparatchik. You know, and this is proof positive. Now, tell me about the prosecuting attorneys. Are they? Do you know who they are? Do they have a long track record of, deep state support and wimpy prosecutions? I mean, who are they?
I should have looked that up, but I.
That's
but
okay.
I didn't.
We can do it next week. Isn't it right? I'm just curious that it would make sense. It's like the same weenies that defended Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now she's coming back and attacking. Now she's going back to the D.C. jail and saying all the things that that they tried to. Kick her off the ballot before her trial. But those incompetent attorneys, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, they could have presented all the election fraud at that time. Why wouldn't a good prosecutor, you know, use the election fraud information they have now? Said, look, you use this here. Here's where you appeared on the news. Here's where you're on CNN. Here's where you were on MSNBC. Here's where you talked about this. Here's where you lied over and over again to impact the election. Here's where you persuaded votes, where you did this, that, and the other thing. You're part of the coup. you're part of the overthrow, the insurrection trying to overthrow the government. Now, maybe this prosecution is going to have to wait until Trump gets in office, and maybe they're doing it now so they don't have double jeopardy. Maybe they're going to try all the major people now, get them off on worthless little parking violations as a double jeopardy prevention from them really being convicted, you know, when a real attorney general takes over in the next Trump administration. Could that be possible?
Well, yeah, but you have a statute of limitations. I'm surprised the statute of limitations hasn't expired on this.
Well, I think it was like the day before it expired, he made his one indictment. It was the day before, wasn't it?
Yeah, but then, right, but that means that what about all the other people he didn't indict?
Well, then obviously they're not going to be indicted, are they? Again, John Durham is part of the deep state. John Durham is part of the cover-up, part of the coup.
Right. So anyway, that's the thing. So they've got that, and then the judge has shot down. Perkins Coie is you know, go ahead, sue me. They're a fraudulent law firm based upon the tobacco settlement litigation, where the cigarette manufacturers routinely and grotesquely ran all of their research into cancer through the law firm, through their outside law firms, and through their general counsel. And that was considered one of the greatest scandals in the legal community, was that they just tried to declare everything to be attorney-client privilege by routing it through the lawyers, even though it wasn't illegal. It was medical research. It was business operations. It was not legal work. It was not attorney. Huh. It was not in anticipation of litigation. It was, and this was considered to be one of the greatest ethical breakdowns in the legal community, was what they did in the tobacco things. Well, that's what Perkins Coie was doing with the elections, and probably not just Hillary, is that because they because that way, when Hillary Clinton put $12 million on her Federal Election Commission report, it just showed up $12 million to Perkins Coie. It didn't show Christopher Steele. It didn't show Fusion GPS. Maybe that was also in there. But the major $12 million was run through Perkins Coie as a scam so that it wouldn't be obvious that they were doing opposition research. And mm-hmm. so then they hired this discredited British spy, Christopher Steele. And remember when James Carville said about Bill Clinton and his scandal, said, is if you take a $100 bill and troll it through a trailer park, you'll get people to say anything. Yeah. Well, you take whatever's left of $12 million and troll it through Moscow, bars. You know, a couple things. Because again, I went over there as a missionary, and then I ended up being, you know, doing teaching business over there. And I, part of my political work was that opposing the Soviet military and their foreign policy under Reagan and things. So I'm pretty darn sure that if somebody goes asking around Moscow, do you have any dirt? You know, I have a few million dollars to spend. Do you have any dirt on Donald Trump? It would take about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they'd make it up. But it would take about 5 minutes for news of that to get to Vladimir Putin. Now, not just because that wouldn't be true of any country. I'm saying that because Vladimir Putin is a former KGB thug.
Right.
I mean, he is, you know, if that happened in Britain, you know, the prime minister might never know. But in Russia, with, you know, with Putin's entire work experience being a KGB agent, they would know what he wants to know. You know, if somebody's over there asking around about Donald Trump, you know, it would take an hour for Putin to be fully briefed, in my opinion, and he says, hand me a notepad, and start drafting the Steele dossier.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying that Christopher Steele ever met Putin or knew it, but I'll guarantee you, whoever fed the information to Christopher Steele was taking dictation from Vladimir Putin, because why not? You know, what fun? You know, these idiots are over here asking around. You know, it's probably one of the best, you know, most fun days that Vladimir Putin had in years.
it's like, okay, let me write for you. You know, he's probably still chuckling about it. So the Christopher Steele dossier, I'm sure it was written by Russian intelligence. And so anyways, that's the $12 million that went through Perkins Coie. And so this is where this guy Sussman is denying that he was doing this for the Clinton campaign, and the billing records, the law firm billing records, prove that he's lying.
Yeah, that's the fascinating thing about this is that the money trail is there. And if he's going for a false statement to the FBI when you got this huge money trail, that's insane. That's an avoidance of prosecutorial responsibility. So let me ask you how long it takes to do a regular investigation. If you've got discovery, you've got you got to interview people, you've got stuff. If you're a prosecutor, so put your prosecutor's hat on for a while. You work for the Department of Justice. You're a prosecutor for them, and you want to bring you're trying to bring a case to trial to prosecute members of the Clinton campaign, including maybe up to Hillary herself. How long do you think it would take, and what would you have to do to accomplish that? 6 months? Maybe.
Well, it's going to be all over the map. But let me answer it this way: January 6th, there was 500,000 people peacefully protesting in the Washington D.C. A few hundred of them, became soccer hooligans and made
you
a
mean
massive
the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. Come on down, the doors are open. You mean those people?
Right.
Selfies with the statues,
right.
as I call them.
So January 8th. The government convened a grand jury. The grand jury indictments resulted from a grand jury that was convened on January 8th, 2 days after. And the then U.S. attorney said on 60 Minutes, admitted in a public interview, that he wanted to indict hundreds of people before January 20th as shock and awe. So he publicly declared his goal of indicting as many people as possible in 2 weeks, so that there wouldn't be any trouble at the inauguration. So it's going to be all over the map, but normally it would be months.
Right. I understand.
I think
months.
Like the Michael Flynn.
I don't understand. Years.
Michael Flynn was probably a few months.
Yeah.
When they investigated Michael Flynn for supposedly talking to the Russian ambassador, which is kind of like the purpose of an ambassador. The ambassador comes all the way over here so that you can talk to him. And that investigation was a few months during the transition period, because they went in like right after, almost immediately after Trump took office. And presented all this information, which is a total lie, and got them to fire Mike Flynn based on complete lies. Because it's okay when the government.
Why did they get rid of Michael Flynn? What was the reason for that? He knew something or somebody.
Because he knew where the bodies were buried.
So he knew the spying. He knew about the Steele dossier. Oh, and what was in the Steele dossier? I've forgotten exactly.
Oh, not just that. I mean, no. Michael Flynn knew everything about everything.
Oh, okay.
He knew the whole deep state. It wasn't just about Russiagate. Mike Flynn was going to be the national security advisor.
Right.
And he either knew all the scams or he could figure them out in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Because he's been around all this world.
So he needs to be the next attorney general.
This
is what happens. This is what we need. Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be great. But he can't. I mean, they could not. It's like having a new sheriff in town.
Right.
And you have to get rid of him if you're going to keep robbing. He was like in the middle of prohibition and gang warfare. He'd be like a new sheriff who's uncorruptible. They couldn't buy him. That's my opinion. I think it's pretty well backed up.
That makes sense.
Because he was gonna expose the deep state. And remember, the whole thing with Ukraine. I forget who I was talking about. Maybe it was you, but
I've been talking about is if you go back and watch the indictment, maybe I was talking to Caroline about this. If you go back and watch the indictment, the impeachments, excuse me, the first impeachment, is that they're saying that, you know, the first impeachment was all about he didn't follow the foreign policy. It's like Trump, you know, Trump was undermining the foreign policy of the United States versus vis-a-vis Russia. The, you know, the theory being that, you know, that the bureaucrats decide what our foreign policy is.
Well, that's crazy.
I mean, if you go back and you listen to their testimony in preparation of the impeachment, it'll and if you think about that, if you look at that, it's like, does the president decide what the foreign policy is? Or, I mean, they were the Ukrainian people, the Ukrainian warmongers, the Ukrainian mafia in our State Department wanted to impeach. I mean, their complaint about this thing. Other people had other reasons they accused Trump, but the number one complaint of the Ukrainian foreign policy mafia was that Trump wasn't following their advice.
And oh yeah, Vindman and that redheaded woman in the State Department, and all those folks in the impeachment. I remember that. I remember that the
Victoria Nuland and the ambassador.
Yeah, yeah, those shameful hearings. That was it. Adam, what's his name? Who's the guy that lies?
Oh, Schiff. Raskin and Adam Schiff and everybody. They went on and on about how Trump's actions were inconsistent with the foreign policy of the United States.
Well, he is
the
foreign policy of the United States. He is the foreign policy.
Right. That's why we elected him, was to tell all these people to go jump off a bridge.
Yep. Well, that's yesterday. Did you hear a chat yesterday with Josh Whitehouse talking about the Pentagon, how he was defense liaison, you know, from the Trump administration to the Defense Department, and his job was to drain the swamp in the Pentagon.
Right.
The fascinating chat we had yesterday.
I mean, but if you listen carefully with it from that perspective, go in their mind because
right.
he was opposed to the deep state.
Pretty much,
the deep
yeah.
State,
I remember them saying
all these
they actually stated that.
Yeah.
They said, "But we had a policy. We've already arranged this with our counterparts. We've determined this. We've written the papers. You know, we're just following through on our plan. You know, and like you said, he got in the way. He challenged our plan. How dare he? Who does he think he is, president?
Well, I think it was." I think it was far more evil than that, but it was
okay.
Like Yovanovitch. I mean, because basically the West, I go on and on, the Western foreign policy, the West foreign policy has been at war with Russia for 30 years.
Hmm.
You know, if you remember that, like, there was the 30-year war and the 100-year war in Europe, that doesn't mean there was a battle every single day. I mean, the way I look at it is there's been a 30-year war with Russia, and
over
you
what?
Know, Putin's foolish over the fact that they just hate Russia.
But they love Russia.
Russia's
everything they want. Russia's every bit of socialism and control they want, isn't it?
The Soviet Union is over. They love the Soviet Union. The Russian people threw out the communists. The Russian people risked their lives, their families, risked being tortured and watching their families be tortured before their eyes by the KGB to get rid of the communists.
Right.
And most people don't understand that Russia was not the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union was not Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this Ukrainian hothead, you know, the Irish Republican Army version of, you know, from Ukraine, who just, you know, for whatever reason, they want to, you know, they've just hated. And so they will, apparently they've been raised, you know, on the witch's brew of, they have been raised on the witch's brew of hating Russia for the great Ukrainian famine. You know, they call
the
Holy Door or whatever.
That was Stalin.
Exactly.
Stalin
was a Georgian.
Yeah, that's true.
Stalin was not a Russian.
Which is farmland, too.
And Ukrainian, I mean, and the Soviet Union was run by communists from around the Soviet Union. In fact, Soviet was to eradicate regional and ethnic differences. one of the horrific things that, you know, the many horrific things, you know, Governor DeSantis down where you are just announced, you know, just ordered one 45-minute period a year in which the students of Florida are going to learn about communism. Well, this is a lot to learn, but they did a lot of horrible things. But one of the things they did is they forcibly moved people around because they did not want regional elite. They wanted no allegiance to anything but to the party. So they forced people to leave certain regions and forced others to move in to eradicate any ethnic differences or loyalties. So when you say the Russians, you know, when these people want to say the Russians ran the Soviet Union, they are ignorant. The whole point of the, you know, Austrian German-based Marxism was to erase from human existence all allegiances to, you know, God, to religion, to anything except to the party. They wanted no competition in their allegiances. So anyway, so they hate.
No, this is important. I want to follow up on that. I think you're on something really good here. I'd like to know how German Karl Marx, you know, ended up influencing Vladimir Lenin, and how communism got to Russia, and then World War II, how communism from Russia was tried to be put back into Germany, and that the fascists, the Nazis, basically destroyed the communists, you know, with great purges, you know, the brown shirts, Night of Long Knives, and the violence and everything else like that, that there really was a war between communism and Nazi fascism, Nazi socialism.
Yeah.
And I still have to learn a lot about that. But how did communism get from – so communism really is a German idea.
Well, you need – I mean, I know a lot, but you could get a historian in there.
Okay.
You should get a historian on because – but the thing is what happened was, is first of all, again, it was like socialism in the 1930s. Communism was considered among the intelligentsia this great, new, wonderful thing, and – you know, people were proud to be associated with it because it was a new innovation. It was going to be wonderful.
Yep,
and,
workers' paradise.
And so it took over European, you know, Austrian, German intelligentsia. And then when it served the purpose, the German Kaiser, and this is proven, this is absolutely proven. This is proven. He sent Lenin on the sealed what they called the sealed train to St. Petersburg with gold. So what's called the Russian Revolution was literally paid for by the German Kaiser.
That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
It is. And now it was sealed because I think because what the meaning was is that nobody could get in or off, on or off.
Like, well,
Lenin was
shot.
Sort of a,
if the Russians knew what he was going to do, they would have killed him.
Yeah. But apparently the Russian Empire at that point was stupid and decadent.
Yeah.
If they had, if they weren't so inept and dysfunctional, this wouldn't have happened. Of course, they were evil too. But so Lenin was a troublemaker. And, you know, Germany was glad to be rid of him, which is, I think, why they put him on a sealed train. It's like, okay, we're going to give you all this gold and put you on a train and send you to St. Petersburg, but you can't get off until you get to St. Petersburg. You know, you can't just jump off somewhere in Germany and cause
that's
more trouble.
Funny.
That's my understanding.
Was he Russian, Georgian,
yes.
Ukrainian? Who was he? He was an actual Russian.
Like many of these guerrilla warriors, he sort of disguised his true mean, you know, his true path. I'd have to double check on that. But these people, you know, they made fake names and all this stuff.
Well, Lenin's a fake name. Stalin means steel. I know that. I don't know what Lenin means. It means something else. It's not a Russian name. Pianki's back, too. So, Pianki, feel free to just jump in when you want to make a comment.
Yeah, I think he was Russian. He was born in Russia anyway. But that doesn't necessarily mean there's lots of ethnic groups. And he studied at Kazan. He studied law at Kazan, which I believe is in Kazakhstan. So anyway, no, I guess it's Russian. It's Russian. But anyway, so the thing is, why would the German Kaiser do this? Because they were losing World War One. I mean, there's no question of this.
Mm-hmm.
That the German-Austrian win, you know, faction was losing World War One on the battlefield. It was a disastrous, stupid war, obviously. And someone came up with this genius idea to knock Russia out of the war by embroiling it in insurrection at home.
And yes, 1917, so it's the war 14 to 18, 1914, 1918, the Russian Revolution, 1917. But Russia was fighting either was Russia wasn't Russia fighting Germany at that point?
Yes. They were fighting with Serbia, and they were all
against Germany
fighting
in the
war. But the thing is, it
wasn't going well.
It worked spectacularly. It was a spectacular success. It was one of the most brilliant, although thoroughly evil actions in military history, because it knocked the revolution. Caused Russia to withdraw from the war. So the Russian Imperial Army left the European battlefield and went back to Russia.
Right.
And so Germany was then poised to win the war until the United States got involved.
See, that was part of the basis of getting rid of the Russian Revolution is that you shouldn't have to fight, you know, the wealthy aristocrats, the Tsar's war. Wasn't that justification? We're going to take you away from a needless war, you know, for rich European aristocracies and monarchies. We're the people's revolution. We will save you from dying in a foreign country for no reason. Isn't that a lot of what the propaganda they used?
Well, I'm sure. And the thing is, it was remember, everybody thought this is one of the, you know, everybody thought this is going to be a war. It's going to be over in 6 months. It was a horrific bloodbath. So this is the Ukrainian mafia that was testifying at the impeachment. And they're all, you know, and the thing is, I know these are all I know some of these people from when I was at the Heritage Foundation. They hated Russia. And I said, no, you hate the, I mean, and government and experts would say, no, the Soviet Union is not Russia. And they would be indignant about it because there were ethnic groups represented all over the Soviet Union. There were leadership groups from all over the ethnic groups. There is not, you know, the Russians were victims as much as the Ukrainians, victims to Marxism and the brutality and everything like that. But the problem is that all these ignoramuses, they wanted to continue to hate Russia for what the Soviet Union did under the evils of godless, ethnic, free, communism.
Right.
And so when the Cold War ended and we won, they just couldn't let it go. I call them the Cold War dead enders. They wanted the glory. You know, these are people who probably see World War II movies and they missed all the glory, so they want to continue fighting.
Well,
this glorious war
for
against
the permanent war class. We've talked about that. Iraq,
yeah.
Afghanistan, Vietnam, Korea. Got to keep it going. It's good for business. Good for us. Good for our ideology. We like to see things blow up.
I mean, it's
yeah.
So that's the thing. It's like. Huh. So we're out of Afghanistan. So how's the military industrial complex going to make billions and trillions of dollars when we fled from Afghanistan? So this has been 30 years in the making. But that's the point is that, so the thing is all these people, this is why, like, why would all these people be all upset about Russia? All these crazy theories about Trump's collusion with Russia. What do you have against Russia?
Why Russia?
Now, you know, what they
Especially
now,
here's the funny part. Hillary was colluding with Russia. Hillary had uranium one. Hillary was Russia's best friend. Hillary was the person that Putin would want of anybody, you know, just because of the fact that they can run all over Hillary. They had enough blackmail material on Hillary. So the idea, and that should be brought up in this trial too. So the idea that Putin wanted Trump is laughable on its face. Anybody who knows anything about Trump knows that he was going to do exactly what he did. He was going to control Russia, control China. He's going to have tariffs, international agreements, you know, have NATO pay their bills and do what they're supposed to do. You know, it's so the idea that Putin wanted Trump is absurd. You know, the last thing Russia wants is an America where we're energy independent, because that cuts into all their oil sales. They love what's going on now. I think they're actually colluding with Russia now through Ukraine. I think this is a joint effort in Ukraine. I'm not sure what's really going on, because you got German Nazis on the east and you got Russian communists on the left on the west reverse that. German Nazis on the west, Russian communists on the east. The Dnieper River is the only thing separating them. And this is a replay of World War II. This is Operation Barbarossa in one country, basically. So I mean, Hillary and Putin are buds. I mean, how Putin's got 20% of our uranium. Why isn't that in the trial?
Well, you know, you'd have to ask ask Durham.
Well, I mean, it's an important question. I mean, I'm not going to get an answer to it, but I just wanted to throw it out there. Well, let me get Pianki, you want to jump into this? We've been talking for a bit. It's been fascinating. I love this history.
Yeah, it is fascinating.
Okay, looks like we got people in the background. You can invite them on the show too. I don't care. We had a dog with a squeeze toy yesterday. It was pretty funny. Jonathan, we need to do more history, because to put this in context, you know, it seems like all roads of controversy lead to Ukraine. It looks like it's the Democrat money laundering machine. It looks like it's the Biden family, you know, personal income. It looks like the Dr. Fascist wacko biolabs, you know, hidden operation. There's so much stuff going on in Ukraine. You know, you got, like I said, you got the Nazis on the east side and the communists on the west side. And they're using it as the battleground. It's not a free country. It's not a democracy. It should be a republic. And it's being used to increase the size of NATO. I think Sweden and Finland are now trying to join in here. Nothing good is coming out of this at all. You know, so there's got to be a bigger plan to it, is what it looks like.
Well,
and what's the State Department doing?
It's complicated. The State Department has been waging war against Russia out of Foggy Bottom for this whole time.
What do they hate? They hate the fact that the Soviet Union lost. They hate the fact that Reagan bankrupted the Soviet Union. That's why we were able to end the Cold War. What is it they hate? And is that part of hating America?
I think so.
Is it all tied in?
I think they want their Swiss bank accounts filled with lobbyist money from weapons manufacturers. I don't know. They can't. I can see the effects. Is that they instead of saying the Cold War is over, we won. They wanted to keep fighting the Cold War, and like I say, the Russian people. When I was over there, if you had gone over there in 1991 and they found out you're an American, they would have shut down the town for a holiday, held a feast, and carried you through town on their shoulders. They wanted to be Americans. They wanted to be America. They wanted freedom. They wanted to be exactly like us. And they believed, and I think justifiably, that we had promised them that if they risked their necks and their families' necks and they risked everything to get rid of our enemies and theirs, the communists, that we would go in there and help them, and we didn't. And they felt, and they were freezing in the winter. They were starving. There was no food on the shelves, and they felt like we completely betrayed them. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to completely, you know, support them.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were over there, you know, because we went over there, and we were part of International Trendsetters teaching them business, and they really expected, like, yeah, but the president of companies, you know, like General Motors, needs to come over and help them. They really felt betrayed, and then the Clinton administration
openly, vastly intervened in Russian elections, just massively, you know, without any shame, interfered in Russia's elections in the 90s and pushed on them an idiot, you know, just a bumbling, I mean, but basically the Joe Biden of Russia was Boris Yeltsin. I mean, there's no condemnation deep enough for Boris Yeltsin. And so instead of building up genuine democratic leaders, you know, genuine democracy leaders, we just like the rhinos do here with pushing bad people in primaries who are, you know, yeah, well, they can win. Yeah, but who cares if they win because they're just as bad as the opposition. The West all backed Boris Yeltsin rather than the hardliners. But he created such a disaster economically and socially and everything like that, that we guaranteed that the hardliners would take back control of Russia.
Who was after that? Andropov.
You know, so,
I think he was the one that took over, if I remember my Russian history, which is... Was he earlier?
I think that's earlier. But then eventually Putin...
We'll figure it out. I want to change subjects in a minute here anyway. I got to play our Sales of All Years piece, and I want to I want to talk about the tale of two assassinations. The one in Brooklyn with the black nationalist supremacist, the treatment he's getting in the judicial system, and the white supremacist nationalist in Buffalo and the treatment that he's getting in the judicial system. So let's do a little contrast in those. My theory is that the white dude is using the idea of Russian energy for fame. That claims not to be, you know, he's a white supremacist and he's an avowed racist because he's going to make famous by the head cam. That's why he survived. He was never intending to kill himself. This is all about making a name for himself. And the surest way to make a name for yourself in this country is for a white person to kill black people. And so I think what he's really doing, we've created a situation where we're actually encouraging criminals, you know, to engage in murder if that's how they want the most fame. And I think that's what's behind it. But the other thing is that the treatment of the black murder assassin in Brooklyn that we don't even hear about anymore. We don't know what his trial details are. We don't know who the prosecutor is. We don't know who the defense is. We don't know anything about the jury. We don't know anything because that's been basically swept off. So we got a tale of two cases. You got both cases where an assassin has murdered, I think, 10 people in each case, and completely different treatment in our supposedly equal justice system and equal media. So let's talk about that. Anything further on Russian history and Jonathan or Pianki?
No, I don't have anything further on Russian history.
That new topic, but it's an important topic.
Well, we may have to pick it up next. We'll have a little bit of time. We'll have about 20 minutes. Let me play one of my San Rosa volunteers, the slightly shorter ones, Federalist Papers number 11, and we'll be right back. So I'll meet both of you guys, grab a coffee. Of course, everybody else in intent, and we'll be back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers, here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Federalist Number 11 was written by Alexander Hamilton and published on November 24, 1787. My overall impression, once you get past the same old arguments for a national government to rule over the states, you get the impression that Hamilton really isn't all that thrilled to have a new nation to create freedom for Americans, the likes of which no nation has ever seen, and more that he wants to reestablish connections with England and other European monarchies and colonial powers in order so as not to offend them, not to bring about their economic retaliation, and worst of all, to advance the business interests of Hamilton and his rich and powerful friends. I'm not sure he realizes that we won the war for independence, and as such, we get to act as a nation with independence. As always, the Federalists are concerned that the government will break into factions, also known as parties, and the states will break into various separate confederacies, both of which would reduce the powers of the Federalists, who appear to want the Constitution so they can run a strong national government over the states and as representatives of the whole nation to the trading nations of Europe, to which they intend to make all the trade deals, which would be enforced with their growing national government navy. So much for federalism, the separation of powers between the states and the intended national government and the independence of the states at all. It's all in a few paragraphs of Federalist Number 11, surrounded by lots of blah, blah, blah. Hamilton, in a rare moment of clarity, says, "Under a vigorous national government, the natural strength and resources of the country, directed to a common interest, would baffle all the combinations of European jealousy to restrain our growth." The Constitution is supposed to be explicitly against a national government, which is certainly not empowered to direct any idea of common interest, which seems to be designed to say, give us a national government so we can use the power of a national government to get the best deals from our former masters in Europe. Hamilton's biggest fear, it appears, is that the Articles of Confederation will remain and the states remain independent sovereign entities which would be capable of making their own trade deals with other nations. And why not? American companies make their own trade deals with foreign governments all the time. So it's not trade and commerce that Hamilton is worried about. It's his lack of control over that state and independent trade, which is why he wants a strong national government over the states. He says, "But in a state of disunion, these combinations might exist and might operate with success. It would be in the power of the maritime nations availing themselves of our universal impotence to prescribe the conditions of our political existence. And as they have a common interest in being our carriers and still more in preventing our becoming theirs, they would in all probability combine to embarrass our navigation in such a manner as would in effect destroy it and confine us to a passive commerce." In conclusion, Hamilton recognizes the amazing bounty available in the new nation. My problem is that he wants that wealth and power for himself and his political and wealth class, who appear to want the Constitution to enshrine their power over the country in the supreme law of the land. To enforce his national government and push it onto the world, he talks of maintaining a navy strong enough to keep us neutral in any conflict. I'm fine with a strong navy, but I'm with George Washington on avoiding foreign entanglements. So who is Hamilton really talking to in Federalist Number 11? The people or his people? He says, "But in the reverse of this eligible situation, we shall discover that the rivalships of the parts would make them checks upon each other and would frustrate all the tempting advantages which nature has kindly placed within our reach. In a state so insignificant, our commerce would be prey to the wanton intermeddlings of all nations at war with each other, who, having nothing to fear from us, would with little scruple or remorse supply their wants by depredations on our property as often as it fell in their way. The rights of neutrality will only be respected when they are defended by an adequate power. A nation despicable by its weakness forfeits even the privilege of being neutral." Hamilton completely discounts that the states and the citizen militias could defend themselves against foreign invasion. However, the whole point of a strong navy was to ensure foreign invaders never got here, and not as Hamilton appears to want, as adjuncts to their commercial operations and trade. He does make one excellent point, that a nation is despicable by its weakness and forfeits even the privilege of being neutral. Compare our strength and independence in the past to the dependencies of the recent present. So what exactly is the Constitution supposed to do, and who is it supposed to be for? At this point, I have no idea from the Federalists. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Radio, dedicated to fixing everything.
Yeah, all in a day's work. All right, we're back with Jonathan and Pianchi. I want to go to Pianchi first. First of all, we haven't heard from you for a while. Secondly, this is something that we all three of us really need to talk about, and that is the tale of two assassinations, as outlined before the presentation. Pianchi, what do you think?
Well, you mean the Brooklyn. Well, you know, that's just the way it goes. You remember some time back when you had the Atlanta shooter
mm-hmm.
in the nightclub? Supposedly when he was going through the building, I think he killed 49, maybe shot 49, killed 10 or a dozen. But every place where the patrons was hiding, he asked, was there any blacks in there? And if so, he had no... beef with them, that you suffered enough.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that you're talking about six people, no matter if they target openly to kill whites or to kill blacks, they're just six people. And the news media plays this for what it plays in order to get what it tries to derive from. And it does a pretty good job of it.
See, that's my question, though. I think the Brooklyn, the black assassin, the black nationalist, black supremacist, he's an absolute racist, and he is a very sick person. I, however, think the white shooter, I'm not going to mention the names. First of all, I don't know, but secondly, I'm not going to learn them anyway. I don't want to give him any more fame. I think he's much more calculating. I think the fact that he went to a place, you read his manifesto, the fact that he went to a place where there were strict gun control laws and there are no magazines over 10 rounds and citizens aren't carrying concealed handguns. The fact that he went to a specific black neighborhood, you know, as a white person, you know, to use the thing that's most guaranteed to get national and therefore international courage, which is, you know, for a white male to kill, you know, black folks in this country. The fact that he picked a mall, a crowded mall, and he had a head cam. The fact that he surrendered rather than kill himself like most of these people do. He wanted to be around for the after effects. And he's probably going to get – he wants the fame of jail. He wants to – even if he gets executed, he's probably going to, you know, get fame from that. But New York doesn't have a death penalty, so he doesn't have to worry about that. He's got 20, 25 years of appeals to enjoy the system. I think he did this out of fame. And it's very – so we have two very different things. And, of course, the media treatment is different. He knows being a white person, you know, killing black citizens, he's going to get more coverage. He knows that doing it all by head cam, you know, and photographing is going to try and guarantee him some immortality. The fact that it was taken down, those videos still exist. They're going to be shown. You know, I think it's a completely different case. And yet, this is where I go to Jonathan, and yet we're supposed to have equal protection of the laws, equal judgment, and yet these two cases are going to go completely differently. Right? Jonathan?
Terrible, awful tragedy. It's like the only time I've actually seen real, you know, anything really racist like this go on. It's a horrible thing. But the thing is that how long have we been told that domestic terrorism is our number one threat, and you know we need to have the FBI do all these things, and yet how come the FBI never catches any of these things?
I mean, always warned ahead of time.
Apparently. Yeah.
Well, this is a huge issue because we don't want red flag laws. We don't want people having the gun seized for what the, you know, some wacko neighbor or ex, you know, partner or spouse thinks that somebody might do maybe, or a vindictive person doing that. But on the other hand, if someone clearly declares on Facebook that they intend to kill a large number of people, that's grounds, that's probable cause right there for a severe investigation,
well,
in this problem, search warrants and everything else.
you still have lopsided justice. Look at the black man that ran his SUV through the Christmas parade of nothing but whites. He was zigzagging along the way trying to kill him. He had a manifesto. He had a rap song talking about killing whites. You had a black man in Tennessee, in Nashville, that attended an all-white church. And then one Sunday he came in and he shot up the people and found out that he was trying to kill 10 white people. So the way the news covers this, you know, a black person is just as racist. What about Chicago, where you don't have over 4,000 shootings of black on black with no white police shooting? Jonathan, now, is that not a hate crime? You mean to tell me, and I know you've heard it, that when a black person like in Chicago is shooting another black person, you mean to tell me they're not using a quote-unquote N-word?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously the problem with hate crimes is defining what it is. But, I mean, that's language. I mean, you have to figure out how do people actually talk. And obviously, you know, just because somebody used the word, and, you know, like you say, it depends on what they really mean by it. It doesn't make something. It's like I said in another context, is that when a mother says, "I'm going to kill that boy," we know she's not going to kill that boy. We have to think about how people actually use real language. But anyway, this is very lopsided, and you know, I don't know what to tell you. It just makes no sense.
Eminem, who is a white rapper, he uses the M word in his N word in his lyrics. So what I'm saying is this: the news media takes these stories the way they want to, and they always use a white on a black to a greater degree than they use a black on a white or a black on a black. And just listen to Al Sharpton at his little conference, how he goes about blaming Donald Trump, referring back to the Charlottesville incident during the time that they were taking down a U.S. soldier statue.
Well, and it raises the question, it's like, if a person murders another person, does it matter? You know, does it matter what their motive is? Does it matter what their race is? It used to be that you watch old movies that the idea was, did someone have a motive? Like, if someone has a motive, like, that probably is probably evidence that they did it, but it's still just they murdered somebody, and they're, you know, I don't know. But the thing is that you talk about this horrible shooting in Buffalo, and, you know, why wasn't it caught? Now, they have, of course, the New York has the toughest gun laws almost of anywhere. And the governor, Hochul, what's your name? How do you pronounce it?
Hochul, I think.
She just issued an executive order. And my interpretation of her executive order is, well, we mean it this time. she basically is issuing an executive order saying, you know, all those laws we have on the books, well, we're, you know, let's enforce them. You know, but they've actually been, which of course has been a complaint about conservatives for a while. It's like, don't pass more laws, enforce the ones you've already got. And so the governor of New York just issued an executive order saying, we really mean it. We're going to actually enforce all these laws.
That's going to disarm the next victims of an assassination.
Well, yeah, because the guy had it.
So how is
because
so
the guy
where, so
the
where,
guy had, bought his gun legally?
Yeah. In fact, he's what I heard. Sure
if people
to,
in the mall.
Go ahead.
If people in the mall was armed, how far could he have went?
So in that way, that's however is the point too. Isn't the government responsible? If you have gun control laws that disarm people and make them more vulnerable to criminals, are not the people who pass them liable for that?
If they weren't, they would. I mean, if a private party
Oh, you're breaking up a little bit.
Yeah,
I mean, I know legislators have immunity, but what I'm saying is, is there a civil trial or even an alternative, you know, a citizen trial? You know, we put the government on trial for disarming people, making them vulnerable to assassins.
Well, I think that they would not be able to. No, I think that they would be immune from that. If a private business created a risk,
mm-hmm.
or something like that, then yes, they could be sued. But I don't think that they could. I think the only reason it wouldn't work is because the government just declares itself to be immune.
What if people tell the government, go to hell, we are arming ourselves like the Constitution says?
Well,
they get arrested.
They
get arrested. But here's the thing, too. This is where jury nullification comes in. I mean, I said, you know, in California, when I was there, if I ever get called for jury duty and it's a case of someone carrying a concealed weapon, you know, whether it's open or concealed, I'm going to vote you know, not guilty simply because the law itself it violates the Second Amendment. And of course, the judge would say, you can't do that. And I say, well, Your Honor, if I'm on the jury, I'm going to do whatever I damn well please. That's my role as a citizen. But that's part of the problem. So, you know, who is it? Larry Klayman was talking about citizen grand juries and citizen. I talk about citizen Supreme Court juries, you know, people's jury for that. But this would be the perfect case for a citizen jury to haul up the government. Not that there's a specific charge, not that they could be held liable, but just to put the idea on trial that these government officials are really as responsible, you know, for the deaths of these people as the person that actually pulled the trigger by creating a condition where these folks were disarmed, where they could not defend
themselves. I agree.
Where they were purposely made vulnerable. This is a great case for a citizen trial, for a citizen grand jury.
I agree wholeheartedly on that one, Greg.
Oh, thank you. Jonathan, want to talk to Larry?
No, that would be a good thing. It may not result in legal action, but it would help educate people about it.
It doesn't have to. Just the fact that we're doing it is enough. It's like when people say, well, how many laws have you got passed? Well, none, but that's not the point. Look at the people who are talking about what we're doing. Look how many people now think of a product liability on vaccine manufacturers. Look how many people realize how simple it is to fix, you know, Section 230 and do all the big tech things. Look how many folks, you know that we could end withholding, you know, for the money that goes for your standard deduction. I mean, these ideas are huge and powerful, and they're spreading fast. Our listenership is growing. You know, it's growing in Australia because of the Australian Bill of Rights. It's growing in Canada, you know, because they're our neighbors to the north, and they're sharing our ideas up there. I mean, this is spreading like crazy. I know, I'm watching it. You know, but this would be a perfect case for a citizen grand jury to say, look, the government is liable. The government is liable for COVID deaths. This is another case for a citizen grand jury. You know, on Dr. Fascist and the willful withholding of treatments, which resulted in the deaths of probably 950,000 of the million people that have died, you know, allegedly from COVID. What they really died from is government policy, and they should be held accountable. And if the government's not going to hold the government accountable, right, which they don't, this is another perfect case for a citizen grand jury, televised on One American News, gavel to gavel.
Jonathan? No, I agree. Yeah,
okay.
That would be a good educating experience.
Yeah. Let me get Larry back. We've got 7 minutes.
Sure, you'd love it.
This is fascinating. Okay. So could the defense in the trial of the white assassin use the trial of the black assassin if the charges are different to say I'm getting different treatment under the law and use that as a defense? Wouldn't that be a twist?
Well, it should be. I mean, selective prosecution should be taken more seriously. But
okay,
the government just declares itself to be immune from any common sense or consistency or, you know, following the same principle. So it's a serious issue. Every normal person believes that that should be a defense, except the government. And, you know, even
okay,
like we had a hearing on Wednesday before
mm-hmm.
Judge Maida, and about things like change of venue and, you know, whether the jury was biased. And I kind of got the feeling that Judge
Maida
in the January 6th thing with
okay,
Oath Keepers. And it was, I kind of felt like he was, you know, that Judge Maida was kind of forced to take ridiculous positions. But in fair, and I don't think he's necessarily a fair judge, but in this case, you know, there were all these court cases, all these precedents that have taken ridiculous positions. And he's forced as the judge to bout nonsense because that's what the appeals courts have decided. And you know, the idea that, you know, like, for example, the idea that somebody just says, I can be fair. And, you know, like, and I'm like, okay, if the guy is Joseph Mengele, then fair is the death penalty. I mean, that doesn't really mean anything. Mm-hmm. And yes, people say they can be fair, and they're not. And it's ridiculous. I mean, for example, I think 91% of the people in the poll in D.C. said they'd already made up their mind about the Oath Keepers, but then 61% of them said they could be fair. So his position is, well, we can find 12 out of all that that will tell us they can be fair. And, like, no one would believe that. That's like, you're kidding me. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the laws, the precedents are there, backing, taking all these crazy positions. What's a judge supposed to do? So
be a judge.
You know, so the
be independent.
Huh?
Think. Be a judge. Not an apparatchik. Think. Use independent judgment. Reason. Thought.
They would
logic.
Never get a fair trial there. They would never get a fair trial there because you got the ignorance of the people not knowing why they were there in the beginning. Same thing with Chauvin, the officer that kept his neck on George Floyd. That trial should not have been held where it was held.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's what we're trying to change that, but that's what's okay. So we got like 4 minutes here. So
mm-hmm.
You see that the disinformation board, maybe we need more than just 4 minutes. But so the apparently, well, of course, don't think it's actually dead. It's just the most obvious example.
They're going to move it.
He beating
where are they going to put it? Where are they going to put it, Jonathan? Which department are they going to hide it in?
They'll probably just change the name and change. Because the thing is that what people, again, what the citizens need to pay attention to is the links to which people will lie. I mean, there's this interview on MSNBC between Jankowicz, who was put in to head this up. And the amount of disinformation per second, you know, was stunning about the disinformation board.
Mm-hmm.
And what people need to be really sensitized to the fact that they're mm-hmm. gonna, you know, they're gonna, you know, they're gonna the ways and the extent to which they're going to lie to take your rights and freedom. You have to pay attention to it because it's dangerous and you know there might be threats at the border and somebody might there might be disinformation or something. Give me a break. I mean, the level of BS to defend this disinformation board, people have to be sensitive to the gobbledygook and the BS used to defend all these trampling of our rights. And it's all, you know, it's for the children. You know, we have to have a disinformation board. You know, she didn't actually say that, but that's the way leftists would do it. It's like, you know, we need a censorship board for the children. And because there might be dangerous threats out there and, you know, it's like, it's just incredible. It's like people, well, I mean, I would almost, it's on Breitbart, this 8-minute
I've got her
interview.
Quote right here. I've got her quote right here. Let me just give you one sentence here. She says, let me give you an example. And this is referring to why this is necessary. FEMA, the agency that handles disasters and environmental issues, would often encounter misinformation about natural disasters. Let's say an adversary like Iran or China would put out a false narrative like this is how you get out of your city. Oh, please give me a break. This is why they need to coordinate these things because China might give the wrong directions out of Kansas if they had a tornado. That's irrational. No one's going to believe that nonsense, and yet that's what she said. We got a minute and a bit.
Yeah, and these risks are so improbable. And mm-hmm. if you live in Kansas, you probably know how to get out of Kansas. And mm-hmm. and you know, someone in broken English from Iran, you're not going to pay attention. Plus, which when you talk about international stuff, this is what the Voice of America is for.
Mm.
We operate a news agency called Voice of America, which is barely constitutional. In fact, there was a, I think there was a law somewhere forbidding the any other
operation. You just cut out for a second, but yeah, I know what you meant. You know, any other voice of America, yeah, which is American propaganda, you know, against Russia. It's fascinating. Well, just in the last little bit here, I think we should keep the board. I think we should use it against the left because we have nothing equivalent to use against them. And if they're stupid enough to create this thing that we're going to be screaming about anyway, the least we can do is return the favor, you know, when patriots and conservatives and America firsters take back power. Do two wrongs make a right? No, but as one person was quoted as saying, they do make a deterrent. And that's something we need to think about, using it for our own purpose to actually clean up their disinformation. On that note, we're done. Let's talk about next week. We'll see what happens. Let's see if we can find out where they hide it. Because we know it's not going away. Jonathan Bianchi, thank you so much for an amazing show. Greg Pangos here for blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. And our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com. That's writeyourlaws. If you want to help the cause out here, we have givesendgo.com/actionradio. And we'll be back tomorrow morning. Friday's going to be 6 o'clock Central Time. I think the rest of the week will be 7, but Friday we still haven't quite figured out. We might keep that at 6 a.m. At least it will be for tomorrow. And I will talk to you then.